Good morning, and welcome to the July meeting of the Historic Preservation Board of the City of Miami Beach. We are happy to be here just a few minutes after 9 o'clock, and we have a busy day. So I'll run through quickly our procedures for the meeting. We'll have the staff present the items one by one to us and their staff recommendations, and then we'll field questions from the board for staff. For any clarifications. Then we'll ask the applicants to come forward, make their presentations within a limited time, and then we'll ask the applicants to take a seat. While the board puts questions forward, we'll take all the questions from the board at once and then invite the applicant back to address all of those questions. So we ask the applicants to make note if there are multiple questions. And then you can make those responses and sit back down. We'll then open up the a public hearing for members of the public in the room or on Zoom. And we'll offer the applicant an opportunity for rebuttal if necessary. And then finally, we'll get to our board member comments. And hopefully after that, we'll be ready for a motion and a vote. Okay? And with that, I'll hand it off to Debbie Tackett.
Good morning, members of the board, members of the public. Welcome to the July 11th HPB meeting. I'm going to turn it over to Nick Kalergis from the City Attorney's Office, who will read into the record the notice regarding lobbyist registration and swear in any members of the public wishing to testify today.
Thank you, Debbie, and good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Today's meeting of the Historic Preservation Board will be conducted in a hybrid format with members of the board physically present in the commission chambers at Miami Beach City Hall, and applicants, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting via Zoom, the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 817-4834-7488#, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 817-4834-7488. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if you're participating by phone. And before I swear in the public, I'd like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You do not have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness, providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance, to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they are communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to swear in any members of staff and any members of the public who intend to testify today. Please raise your right hands. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nick. First order of business this morning is the approval of the June 13th minutes. Are there any corrections to that, or we can entertain a motion? Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, all those in favor? Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you. I believe we do have one request for continuance this morning, and this is HPB 2305727801 Atlantic Way. The applicant is here today, and staff would have no objection to this request for continuance. And with that, if you have any questions for staff, I'm happy to answer them. Okay. Mr. Larkin? Yeah.
So good morning, Mr. Chairman, Board Member, Staff. Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, here representing the applicant with address at 7801 Atlantic Way. We are just eager to do some more neighbor outreach. We've spoken to the homeowner across the street, and we were able to address a lot of her concerns. but we're eager to probably represent to the whole entire association. We've spoken to the president. We think that could be forthcoming. And so we'd like an opportunity to do that before the September hearing. But we'd like to request a continuance to September.
Okay. Do you have any questions for the applicant regarding the continuance?
I was just going to add, Lindsay? I was only going to ask that when it comes back after the continuance, whether you guys might talk a little bit about the recycling plan and salvage mm-hmm. plan, if that's part of your
proposal. We can do that.
Proposal? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no more questions, we can open it to the public. Are there any members of the public wishing to comment on the request for continuance? Anyone on Zoom?
And Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, the timer is not working, so I'm going to be using my phone. So I'll set the clock at 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mr. Lopez. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jack Finglass, and I'm representing today the Miami Design Preservation League. And it's ironic that I'm coming to you with a suggestion for a continuance when I didn't know that they were going to come with the same suggestion. But I'd like to read a statement that we have which might add to their proposal for the next meeting in September. We have some constructive criticism of their plan. We have to revise that. I'm speaking on my own behalf because there was a mix-up in signals. It is my pleasure to come before you and the planning department to ask that the project be continued until such time as our questions regarding the validity of the city's findings relating to this project can be further studied to determine how your actions can advance the causes of both historic preservation and great design within the Altos del Mar Local Historic District. After carefully reading the staff report and looking at all the evidence given to the MDPL, we do believe that no attention at all appears to have been given to the contributing 1935 historic house by Schopel and Southwell, extant on the site. Rather than explore and honor the historic structure while allowing additional development on the site, which is entirely possible, the city, the owner, and the architect have overlooked the very basic idea of historic preservation in this district. The idea of using resiliency, combining an historic structure with great new design features, which is supposed to be the main purpose of such a design district, has been overlooked completely. We have not seen an historic structures report. The satisfaction of the certificate of appropriateness criteria towards the goal is questionable. 7 of the 10 design guidelines for the district are not complied with. Miami-Dade County does not think that this building is unsafe in any way. The consignment of such large amounts of debris from such structures as this and the Deauville do not help stem the environmental damage caused by the needless waste of our waste materials. There are ways to preserve this house through floodplain waivers, resiliency interventions, city-granted variances and exceptions. MDL believes that considerably more effort and work is needed in this case to achieve the purposes for which the district was created. By working together in a collaborative and transparent manner, the MDPL, the city, and the planning offices of the public and the Historic Preservation Board can save the environment that makes the city of Miami Beach such a special place. MDPL strongly believes that more creative analysis and work on this project is desperately needed. Thank you. So where it says MDPL today, it just means me. But this was before we had the issue. So thank you very much.
Okay, any other members of the public wishing to speak? Mr. Larkin, do you have a rebuttal?
Yes, thank you. So, I don't think it's fair to go after the substance of the application. This is only about the continuous request, and I'm not going to commit that same mistake. So, but just know that we've never claimed this is an unsafe structure, and we did submit a historic research report. Other than that, I don't want to go tit for tat with Jack, but I just wish that you all continue it to September.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move it again.
Okay. Ms. Lovell made the motion. Do we have a second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that is a continuance to the September 12th, 2023 meeting. Okay. Thank you. Moving on to our next item.
The next application is HPB 22-0540, 2457 Collins Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for modifications to the north facade of the building at the penthouse level.
Thank you, Jake. This is the Royal Club condominium. This is classified as a non-contributing building. It was constructed in 1981. This is a very straightforward, simple request to modify at the penthouse level the very easternmost portion of the north side of the building in order to expand existing openings. The applicant is proposing to demolish a small portion of the wall area, inclusive of the existing window opening, in order to have more glazing at that level. Staff has no objection to this application. We would note that it's a relatively common practice in architecture to have a slightly different design at that uppermost level, and we do not believe that this modification will have any adverse impact on the design of the building or the surrounding historic district, and we are recommending approval as noted in the draft order. I am available for any questions.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is David Sachs. The office is 2 South Biscayne Boulevard, here before the applicant today. As Debbie had mentioned, we ask for a modest or a very innocuous request for the demolition of the penthouse unit of a small area of the limited common element that has been approved by the condominium board, and as well as has staff report as mentioned earlier. Again, the specifics are essentially a 17-by-7-foot demolition of that limited common element or northern wall that we're asking for to be replaced by a window so we could have some visual view of North Beach. As Debbie also mentioned, there's precedent for this, both up north and south. In fact, my client's inspiration for the application before you came from the one where they have these specific windows or these similar windows that we're talking about here. So with that, I don't think there's really a lot more to talk about other than that we have a project manager here today as well as the owner, Mr. Troy Taylor, and happy to answer any questions. Thank you. I know you got a long agenda.
Any questions to the applicant? I have one, which is simply if there were other units, owners interested in doing similar work.
In the building?
Yeah.
No, there's not. To my knowledge, there is not.
If there were, would the building allow that?
The building would have to consider it in a painstaking fashion as they did with us. You know, we had a few iterations of going before, not only, I think moving through the Historic Preservation Board and with staff may have been just a tad easier than dealing with the condominium board. So I'll leave it with that.
No more questions. Are there any disclosures? No? Okay, we can open it up to the public. Anyone on Zoom, raise your hand. Anyone in the audience, please come forward. Mr. Chair, seeing no public comment, we can close that and open it up to board discussion.
Any board member comments?
No. Just to say that is true with penthouse levels, and when you ask about other floors, obviously the further down you go in the building, you want to take out a big hole. There's a lot of building above that to support. Here you're on the top floor, and from an engineering standpoint, it isn't a problem at all. On a lower floor, it might be, and that was a good question to have raised.
Okay. Perhaps a motion?
Okay. Okay, do we have a second?
Sure, second.
Okay, let me call the roll. Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Breslin?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you. Have a great day, everyone.
Okay, we are moving right along this morning. Our next application is
HPB 22-0550-833 6th Street. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the installation of the Apollo mural on the approved fire station building.
Okay, I will try to keep this brief because I know that the city has a presentation. This is coming to you as a result. Well, first of all, I do want to acknowledge and thank Mitch Novick, who's in the audience. He has been the biggest champion of the Apollo mural. And I think in your package, you can see today how, you know, how great of an idea that he had to preserve this piece of history. Now, just a little bit of background. In 2021, the board actually, as part of the Aman project at the Versailles Hotel at 3425 Collins Avenue, the board accepted a proffer by the Aman developer to work with the city to relocate this particular mosaic. This mosaic was originally constructed on the 1955 addition to the Versailles. That addition was previously approved by this board to be demolished. That has been demolished. We look forward to that project moving forward, but in the meantime, the developer of the Versailles project stored that mural and has worked with a conservator to prepare a report and do some initial conservation work. So we are here now as a result of that condition that was proffered by the developer accepting their offer to fund, to pay for the relocation and the installation of this mural. And after several years, the city has finally found a location which we feel is appropriate and will enhance the Flamingo Park neighborhood. So this is proposed to be located on the west facade of the new fire station. That new fire station was approved by the board last year. And you can see from the renderings, this is challenging because this mural is over 100 feet long. We looked at many different city facilities. And this is actually the perfect fit. And so we are delighted that this will be retained as part of the city's cultural history, and we are highly supportive of the application. I am available for any questions that the board may have. If not, we can turn it over to Colette Satchel from CIP. I see Virgil Fernandez, the fire chief, is also in the audience, as is Maria Hernandez, the capital the geobond coordinator.
Welcome to the team.
Good morning, everyone. This is a pleasure to be here for this one. I think we're all enjoying how well this mural has fit within our building. I'll introduce Jeff McDowell from Wanamaker Jensen Associates, and he'll walk you through the presentation. Go ahead.
We're ready to go. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Jeff McDowell. I'm a senior project manager at Wanamaker Jensen Architects, leading the Apollo mural. We have a brief presentation on the kind of past, present, and future of the Apollo mural, just to show everyone where it came from, where it's going, and how it got there. A little bit on the artist, Jack Stewart. He was a painter, muralist, designer, went to Yale. And then what's kind of interesting is he did go to Columbia and studied architecture so he could better integrate his murals into the built environment. Some of his notable work include furniture and public murals using glass tiles and mosaics, you know, throughout the East Coast and on cruise ships as well. He also did furniture and pioneered different ways of including glass mosaic tiles into different elements. A little bit on the history. It was at Versailles in the 50s installed, massive, one of his largest murals, stood there for many years until, 2015 when it was removed and stored. It is in the process of being restored so we can hopefully install it on the proposed building. The mural itself depicts Apollo driving the chariot across the sky. On the left is Artemis, his twin sister, and on the right is Leto, or Latona, the mother and the two twins. Past considerations include the Lincoln Road Garage, Miami Beach Convention Center across the street, and the Scott Rakow Youth Center. Our proposed location would be the new fire station on 6th Street. And as you can see, it almost fits perfectly into the design, dimensionally accurate, and you know, gives it some relief and depth. Materiality of the proposed, the behind the mural would be a perforated screen. That would be a powder-coated warm gray to give it a little contrast. Behind it would be a white stucco and ground face block veneer to give it some contrast. But the perforated aluminum screen would only be at 50%, so when the light hits it, we will have some depth. Section detail through, if you can look, the building is towards the back, and then we have about 18 inches. We have structure, the perforated screen, and then the actual mural itself. Lighting would be from the top. We would make sure that it goes down so we don't have any glare to the neighbors. If you look a little closer, you can see it is on an extended bracket with a angled field of view for the light beam. And then we would propose a steel structure behind it with 18 inches, as I said, so you could get behind it and maintain it. Additionally, for routine maintenance, we would go from the top, have outriggers permanently installed so you could descend down like a window washing and not impede any of the fire station's activities while it was being taken care of. Here's a night rendering showing what it would look like at night. You know, it has that depth I was talking about. You have the shadows on the back wall. Plus, the lighting is very subdued, so it just glows from the background and doesn't cause any glare issues with the neighbors. Additionally, it's been talked about having some sort of timer controlling the lighting, so at night, it wouldn't be on all night. A time yet to be disclosed, it would turn off, so it wouldn't be on, you know, throughout the night. In closing, sunset view, close-up, kind of showing you yet a different lighting condition of it. I feel the Apollo is all about light, it's all about the sun, so we really tried to play with how we could, you know, incorporate this into the building without putting it just, you know, directly onto the surface. And here I think it really creates a unique presentation that I think Jack Stewart would be appreciative of, the care we put into it.
I think it's also key to mention that it's on the west facade, which is the same orientation as it was historically installed. So I think it's almost pleasing to see that it's just fallen into place here at the fire station.
Right, and we have looked into different types of ways to preserve it to make sure we don't have any issues with diesel exhaust fumes or anything affecting the longevity of it. We're looking at different coatings and routine maintenance to make sure that it is preserved for the long term. And with that, we'll open it up to questions. Anything you have? Correct.
My mic's not on. So I'm just wondering that the cover of the handout shows like windows behind the placement of the mural, but the last image on the screen doesn't. Are there windows?
There are windows.
Behind
it's,
it or not?
It's because of the lighting at dusk. When we did the rendering, it kind of obscures it with that 50% screen. So there will be windows, and that's how we'll access it to maintain the back of it. That's why we wanted that 18 inches. So we'll have a couple operable windows, so if we need to get back there, clean debris, or you know, check the structural rigidity, it's possible to get in from the inside.
Will there be, because I see a lot of attention has been made to how the mural is going to be lit up.
Yes.
So there's going to be backlighting through the windows?
Backlighting. These are actually the dorm rooms, which have blackout shades installed. And they're very small, so we've looked at it, and they have a U-channel also on the sides. So as the blackout shade goes down, there won't be any light that actually comes into the room.
Okay.
Thank you for the questions.
I also had a question about the mural itself. Can you talk about the material upon which the mural is painted?
Sure. It's a aluminum backing with glass tiles. And we're going to, you know, create a substructure that supports that aluminum plate. So there'll be horizontals that you can't see on the verticals that support the actual back. And they'll be kind of field located to make sure that we don't have any parts that are, you know, going to move in the wind or have any issues with attachments.
Right, so it's not painted. It's glass tiles
in
a concrete base.
Mm-hmm. It's all glass tiles, yeah.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Very comprehensive.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Are you guys going to put like a plaque or signage explaining the mural at some point that's accessible to people to explain the artwork?
I don't think it's been discussed, but I think that's a possibility. We have some information in some of the pavilions. I think that'd be a great place where people could approach, read about it, and then you know, look at the mural.
In a safe space, away from the fire trucks.
Right, yeah, not in the drive.
Thank you.
For sure.
Yeah, we have that pavilion that is on 6th Street that can definitely include information on the artwork.
And the artists as well. I think that's a great idea.
Okay, I think that does it for... Oh, sorry, Ray. One more.
I'm curious. Every location that you looked at it as a flat surface, but it's originally mounted on a corner. And I'm just surprised that you didn't look at any options for it to be on a corner. But I think you've done a great job with this.
Thank you. Appreciate it, sir.
Okay, if there's no more questions, any disclosures? I will say, this morning pass out a letter of support from Randy Gew, who is the Assistant Director of Collection Development at the Emory University Stuart A. Rose Manuscript Archives and Rare Book Library. So he is very enthusiastic, and that was just this morning. I passed that out, and we also had sent you the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association's resolution in support of this project. That was much earlier. That's my disclosure, because the letter from Emory, I don't believe, was in the online comments. Any other disclosures? Okay. If not, we can open up to the public. Any members on Zoom, please raise your hand. Any members of the audience, please come forward.
Good morning. I'm Mitch Novick. In 2014, I spearheaded the effort to save Jack Stewart's Apollo murals, formerly titled Apollo Driving His Sun Chariot Across the Sky, and Latona and Her Twins. I first took note of the aluminum and glass mosaics as a young child while driving with my family from the Seville Hotel towards the Rascal House restaurant. The prospect of having these murals returned to Miami Beach is very exciting. Regina, Jack Stewart's widow, their family, and friends are equally excited and grateful that Jack's work has survived. I would be remiss if I didn't recognize former Mayor Neeson Kasdan, along with his clients Alan Faena and the Amman Group Hotels, for stepping up to the plate. They're funding this Herculean task, and despite much prodding from me over the years, they will be delivering this community a home run. I also want to recognize Assistant City Manager, or Geo Bond Coordinator, Maria Hernandez, who early on understood that Stewart's work is significant and culturally important. Also, a big shout out to Fire Chief Virgil Fernandez and CIP's Colette Satchel, as well as all of city staff who've worked tirelessly to bring us here today. In closing, residents and visitors alike will once again be able to appreciate, study, ponder, and reflect upon Jack Stewart's masterful work.
Good morning, Matthew Goltanoff with the Miami Design Preservation League. While we continue to lament the potential impending demolition of the Morris Lapidus designed 6th Street Community Center, we are pleased that the Jack Stewart Apollo mural will have a second life in a prominent location within the architectural district. Special thanks to MDPL board member Mitch Novick for his tireless advocacy when so many thought that these murals could not be saved. Mitch took it upon himself to develop a path forward to protect and honor these pieces of history. We also thank the owners of the Versailles Hotel and Aman for putting up the funds for the restoration of these murals and the City of Miami Beach for working to find a new location. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. On Zoom, we have Scott Needleman. Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Scott. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
Well, it's good to be back in front of the Historic Preservation Board, if only virtually. You all got our, and I'm representing the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association. You've all got our resolution that the Neighborhood Association is in full support of the installation of the Apollo mural on the west side of the building. We just think it's going to be a great addition to the neighborhood and sort of really soften up that west side of the building. I know, you know, this project, the fire station, South Shore Community Center project, has been talked about for many years. There's been many discussions, many debates over it. Not only in City Hall, but at the Neighborhood Association and other places as well. This is the only debate or discussion that came to the FPNA where there was no opposition, no negative comments made when it was presented to all those in attendance at our last meeting on July 3rd. So we look forward to seeing this. Mural being installed on the building, and I just can't wait to see it complete. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Our next speaker is Charles Duncan. Good morning, Charles.
Hi, Charles. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
I'm joining you from upstate New York. I am Charles Duncan. I'm the executive director of the Richard Pousset Dart Foundation, but formerly I was a curator at the Smithsonian's Archives of American Art, where I acquired the archive of Jack Stewart for the Smithsonian. Jack is quite a remarkable artist, very accomplished in many different categories of art making and also art history. He was a major historian of the evolution of graffiti during the 1970s, which has a strong correlation to the idea of mural making. But I just wanted to read into the record that it's a remarkable thing that a mosaic, especially that's 70 years old, could be preserved. Most mosaics are attached to buildings and integrated into the fabric of the building itself. And sort of his foresight that put this onto an armature of some type that could be removed and preserved is just remarkable. So. Terrific that this is being preserved. And speaking today from the land where firehouses up here are generally red brick buildings, I must say it's a very beautiful building that you're building down there. And this mosaic seems completely appropriate. Apollo himself is the god of order, and driving his chariot is sort of a little bit of an allegory of firefighters heading off to do good in the neighborhood there. So, and his twin sister Artemis is the associated with the moon. So you have a little bit of day and night as the firefighters are on guard around the clock. So I just wanted to put in my support for this, and also just on behalf of everyone who's worked with Jack Stewart's legacy, to thank Mitch Novick for all he's done with this project. I published on Jack Stewart in the Smithsonian's magazine. He's certainly an accomplished artist, well recognized in many places, and it's just terrific to be able to have this mural preserved. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Chair, I see no other members of the public wishing to comment.
Okay, any board member would like to comment? I guess I'll briefly piggyback on that allegory, if I may. Watching the unfolding of the saga for the search for the right location for the fire station, the right design for the fire station, all the compromises and the hard work that's been put into it, can't help but see the parallel to the story of the birth of Apollo and his sister Artemis. Their mother, Leto, really upset Zeus's wife, Hera, at the time, and Hera would not allow Leto to give birth anywhere. And so as the story goes, Leto was searching for a place, a comfort, to give birth to these twins, and only after a long search did they find an island that was floating in the sea. That was the island of Delos, just off the coast of Mykonos. And so I think there's an interesting parallel here about a search and a struggle and an arrival, and I hope that this bodes well for everybody involved.
Well, that's a hard act to follow. I was going to actually tell a little bit of that story, but I'll just tell a personal story, just how pleased I am, because in 2015 I was on the board when we were starting this, when we were starting this journey, and I just like can't tell you how happy it makes me to see. And the restoration report was very interesting too, because the materiality of this is so special and so interesting, the way the glass tiles, and that's part of I think the artist's legacy is to kind of be innovative on these issues of how he makes his art and uses glass, and all of that's kind of really coming together so beautifully over 8 years. So congratulations, Mitch, really. Thank you. And to the city.
Well, Pete, I just feel obligated to say something before we vote, too, because as a historic preservation board, I mean, this is purely an accomplishment of historic preservation, and also that reflects a community's involvement, an individual's involvement, commitment, and vision, and I think this is a really great moment for the board to preserve. I like art, so I think to preserve historically significant art that tells a story, that this is a significant accomplishment for many people individually, and I'm glad that we get to be a part of it in order to approve it today unanimously.
Do we have a motion?
I move to approve.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Let me call the roll on that. Mr. Breslin?
Yes.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Good day.
The next application is HPB 23-0576, 1529 Jefferson Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the renovation and restoration of the existing building and the construction of a detached multifamily residential addition at the rear of the site.
Okay. Maybe, do we need a couple minutes?
No, I'll come back to the car. I forgot I was attached to the wall.
Okay, is the applicant here for this application?
There you go. Thank you.
Oh, okay, so the applicant is on Zoom. Let me just briefly, this is a pretty simple application. The existing building is two stories. It is a contributing building in the Flamingo Park Historic District. It was designed by Henry Hohauser and constructed in 1936 in the Art Deco style of architecture. The part of this application also includes the restoration of the existing building, which is located toward the front of the property. It includes restoring all exterior architectural features, replacing non-original windows and doors, with historically accurate windows and doors and the introduction of central AC. So we're very supportive of that existing contributing building receiving a well-deserved renovation. The detached addition is located at the rear of the site. It will contain 6 apartment units. Staff is supportive of the design of the building, which does it has been designed in a manner which we believe is compatible with the existing contributing building. It includes punched masonry window openings, horizontal banding, and projecting eyebrow features. We believe the addition, which we don't think will be very visible, if at all, from Jefferson Avenue, is within the scale and context of the existing neighborhood in the surrounding historic district, and we are recommending approval subject to the conditions outlined in the draft order. Do you have any questions for staff?
I had a question that I'm gonna just ask about this particular example, but it happens in other cases when we're looking at the evaluation of whether the existing buildings can be raised elevated up to base flood elevation, plus the City of Miami Freeboard. And it said it's not applicable. It would be reasonable and feasible. It would not be reasonable, feasible, or economically appropriate to elevate the existing building to the CMB Freeboard. Do you see that it's on page 3 of 7 of the staff report? I was only going to ask are you with me on that?
Yes.
I was going to ask how that's like. If you could just quickly say how that's what the process is for evaluating that, because I know it's not just this case; it comes up again and again.
Right. And it's something that we do consider on every application. Typically, with the smaller projects, which this is a small rear addition, there are practical aspects that may make raising the building, in this case, not feasible due to the budget of the project. We do believe, however, that the renovation of the existing building, including impact-resistant windows, including any structural repairs that need to be done, does further the city's resiliency. The central air condition, for example, removing those through the window units, putting in energy-efficient windows and energy-efficient mechanical systems that are raised above the required floodplain do further the resiliency goals of the city. Elevation is something we talk about with a lot of applicants, but typically it's on the much larger projects. We've seen the one on Indian Creek, which was elevated. Two projects in the Indian Creek neighborhood, 2901 and the Indian Creek Hotel project, much larger projects with larger budgets. Both of those raised their floors. Also, the South of Fifth project, which was a new office building, incorporated an elevation of the existing building. So we try to balance the city's resiliency goals with the scope of each individual project. But it's something we can, going forward, I think we're gonna try to, I know the city is looking at incentives, try to provide more incentives to people so that maybe financially it does make more sense for that type of extreme resiliency by, elevating a building 3 or 4 feet. But again, with the proposed upgrades to the building, we do believe that this will ensure the building's lifespan further than it would if there were no rehabilitation work proposed. But that's a great question, and I think as the policymakers of the city keep discussing this, I think that is something that is important to look at. What type of incentives are available and resources are available to people that maybe even have smaller projects this would be feasible for?
Well, and even the idea that just reading it, that who decides the reasonably feasible and economically appropriate? And it's obviously the building owners now kind of weighing in and saying, this is just not in my budget. And this, so just to kind of, just to know that, because I was just kind of curious. Thank you.
Any more questions for staff? Okay, any disclosures? No? Okay, we can open it up to the public. I see on Zoom we have Joseph Magazine. Good morning, Joseph.
Hi, Joseph. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do, yes.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
Excellent. Just want to thank everybody for their time and dedication to our city. If I am understanding this application correctly, it looks like it'll actually be preserving residential housing. I understand that usage oftentimes is not under the purview of the Historic Preservation Board. I'll leave the historic preservation part up to the experts on the board here. But I do just want to commend this project. Across the city and specifically in Flamingo Park, so many instances, these buildings, as your discussion just touched on, lose their economic viability. And what we've seen is a trend to turn residential housing and residential areas to transient usages, oftentimes short-term rentals. We see that all across Flamingo Park and some other areas. So to the extent that this project is able to preserve residential housing, I just wanted to applaud the applicant for that. I certainly haven't been shy about voicing my displeasure when it goes the other way, so I want to give kudos to where I feel as if during a housing crisis we're working to preserve residential housing. So, again, thank you for the city and the board for their time and dedication, and I look forward to tuning in.
Yeah, I think everyone – sorry, Matthew. Tony Leon is on Zoom. However, I don't know if he has a presentation because he did not have his hand raised. Tony, are you giving
morning.
A presentation?
Yes.
Which is why we skipped over you.
Prepared. If you'd like, I can. I'm happy to speak about the project.
So we can pause the public hearing. We can reopen the public hearing after the presentation, just so that we're following proper procedure.
Yeah, we can do that. And Tony, let me swear you in before you begin. So do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. You can proceed.
Okay, great. Is there the presentation that we emailed that you'll be showing on the screen?
Yeah, we got it on the screen.
Okay. It doesn't...
Yeah, Tony, I don't think we received a formal presentation for you. At least I don't see it in the record.
We did, and we received confirmation that you received it, but that's okay. I'm just going to skip around a little bit. So if we can go to the next slide, please. The next slide. Actually, this is just a you can go back one more. Sorry. I'm going to jump around. I had this all in order, but that's okay. This is a demolition plan that basically shows the level of demolition that we're doing, which really involves, you know, all the interiors. We're basically leaving the exterior shell, the front, the entry, the stoop, the stairs, and pretty much everything on the inside is going to go. Okay, next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. I'm going to come back to this one. Next slide. Next slide. Geez, I'm sorry. This is not how this was supposed to go. Next slide. Next slide. Oh, I'm going back to all this. Oh, sorry. Next slide. I'm looking for a map. There's a map. Okay, you know what? Let's go back to the floor plans, and I'll just start the presentation by saying that back in like 2016, this was a project that my firm had prepared plans, and we went for the HPB approval. It's basically the same scope that we're presenting today. It was approved. The project was never developed. The lot stood vacant and deteriorating until now. So today we're presenting a very similar project, but not exactly. The current owner is a family of six with four kids. He'll be developing this project to have long-term tenants and a place to call home when he comes to visit Miami Beach. The front building, a beautiful gem designed by Henry Hohauser, completely gutted. The current conditions just require this level of work. It will be reconstructed as four units. Each of the units are two bedrooms. The exterior being completely restored and accented, which is something that will be exciting to see because for so many years this building has been neglected. And one of the things that'll finally be revealed, so to speak, are these little details that the building has that you really haven't seen in a long time because of the overgrowth of trees and also the single, you know, color of paint. It looks like a plain white box, but actually the building has some very nice details. I'll just skip onto the floor plans. This page, A2.0, yes, shows the first and the second floor of the entire project. The existing building layout on the left will remain with a center stair and four units, two units on each floor. But unlike the original building or the 2016 version, all these units are two bedrooms. We're providing access to the rear building on the north and the south sides of the existing building. The south side has a ramp that accesses the flood elevation and a courtyard between the buildings where the elevator access is and also a trash room. On the north and south sides, there are steps that take you down to grade level to a proposed walkway around the building. The new building on these two floors also has two units per floor and two bathrooms as well. Two bedrooms as well. And a large open living dining kitchen area. Next slide. Okay. The third floor, the one at the bottom, also has two units, but this level has a unit that the owner himself will keep as a home away from his home in Washington, D.C. I mentioned he has four kids. This plan is different from the floors below in that the south unit is a very comfortable one bedroom that allows for a three bedroom unit on the north for the owner himself. It also has an interior access to a rooftop terrace via an outdoor stair, and maintenance to the rooftop AC units would be through a roof hatch on the third level common space in front of the elevator. Next slide. Okay. These are the proposed elevations for the historic building. It's a great example of a streamlined modern style building, popular in the 30s and 40s. Great recessed and raised lines on all four elevations that'll be highlighted in grays and blacks. There's a nice T-banded stucco detail at the top of the parapet, a great entrance canopy feature with planters on either side of the door, again highlighted with new contemporary paint colors. And of course, all new anodized windows and doors with clear glass. Next slide. These are the proposed elevations of the new structure, taking direction from the existing building, with horizontal bands and lines that complement each other, but they are two distinct buildings. The vertical railings and the balconies kind of offset this strong horizontality of these two buildings together. Next slide. Okay, here are the east and west elevations of the new building. Again, horizontal lines, eyebrows, banding, balconies, and some vertical railings. Next slide. This diagram is the line of sight, which means that from the front of the building and all the landscaping that we have around the property, the view of the front of this building and its context on the street will remain the same as it has for almost 90 years, since the 30s, I guess, except, of course, you know, painted in landscape. Next slide. Next slide. An aerial view. Next slide. Okay, just a little context here. This is where I wanted to start. 15th Street on the right, 16th Street on the left, Jefferson right down the middle, and 1529 is the third property from the right. You see it's small building with a large open area in the back. Next slide. These are all the properties that are on the east side of Jefferson Avenue, all just comprised of a series of two-story buildings. Next slide. And these are the ones on the west side, two-story buildings and a couple of three-story buildings. Next slide. These are the current conditions, overgrown and in desperate need of repair. Next slide. Okay. Street view. Just wanted you to look at that for a second. Okay, next slide. The bottom is the rear. The top rendering is the walkway.
Tony, you have 2 minutes remaining.
Okay, next slide. This is the interior courtyard from both sides. The one on the top is looking from the north, and the one on the bottom is on the courtyard looking from the south. Next slide. Side elevation. This is the north side. Next slide. Next slide.
That's the final slide. That's the last slide.
That's the last slide? Okay. It's missing some landscape drawings. But okay. Anyway, that concludes my presentation. I can answer any questions you might have, or try to anyway.
Thanks, Tony, and sorry about the issue with the presentation.
No worries.
Okay, so let's see if the board has any questions for Tony Leon, or if not, we can go back to the public.
My only question is this going to be for 6 months and a day rental and longer, or are there plans for transient rental?
There are no plans for transient rental. These are all designed to be longer-term units, two bedrooms and up. There is that one-bedroom unit that's on the top floor of the new building. But even that might just be overflow for the owner himself. Again, he's got a big family. But if not, it'll be a long-term rental.
Okay, and just to point out, to follow up on Mr. Breslin's question, short-term rental is not permitted. It's not allowed in this particular area of the city. This is zoned RM1, so they would not be permitted to utilize this property as short-term rental. That's just important to point out for anyone.
I'm sorry, I thought it was RM2.
No problem.
Nope.
All right. I think I heard Mr. Leon say at the beginning of his presentation that he emailed something in to use today, but then he went over what we have before us. I just want to know for sure if what they're proposing today is the same as what we went over, because I heard him say at one point it's similar but not exactly, but I think he was referring to one floor compared to the floor below it, not to this plan compared to what he emailed.
So what he was referring to is the actual presentation itself, which is sometimes different from the plans different, you know, organization, it's usually, you know, a shorter presentation in terms of the number of slides and the images used. Unfortunately, there was an issue, and we did not have that presentation uploaded. But regardless, what he presented today are the actual plans.
Okay, there's been nothing changed.
So nothing has changed from what is in your package. What you would be voting on today is the exact same thing that you have in your package and that you have reviewed.
Good. Yeah, sorry for any confusion there. I think I also mentioned that back in 2016, we had a project that was approved at the board that was very similar to this, but not exactly. This had some differences between what was approved in 2016 and what was approved or what's being presented here to you today.
So I have two questions. One, looking at the historic resources report that was provided, there's some microfilm, and, you know, as microfilm is, sometimes it's really hard to read. Were there originally two buildings on this piece of property when Hohauser designed it originally? I can't tell if I'm looking at a street view or a side view.
No. Just one.
Just the one. Okay. So the backspace was always vacant from the beginning.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
That was my first question. My second question is, and you mentioned just again now that you had a previous project approved in 2016, and I was going to comment on this before it was brought up. This property has sat kind of vacant, derelict, fenced up as long as I've lived in this city, perhaps longer.
Yes.
So I'm curious to know, why didn't we move forward in 2016? And have things changed? Are we going to be able to move forward with this? I mean, I would like to see this building preserved and not fall further into disrepair. And I want to hear a little bit about that if you have any information.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what happened. It was a developer and a contractor who owned the property previously, and he had some partners. I don't know what happened, but, you know, the plans were approved. We did construction drawings. We submitted for permit. We actually had a permit. It was ready to start construction, and they never started. And so the permit expired. The approval from the board expired. And now, you know, 6-7 years later, we're back with a motivated owner who's ready to start construction. And we made some tweaks to the design to just kind of fit his needs. And that's where we are today.
And just one follow-up, if I may. And this may be an oversight on my part. It didn't dawn on me until just now. So there has been a change in ownership of the entity that owns the building, it seems
yes.
like. Okay,
yes.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Got it. Yep.
I'll just jump in. I just was wondering if you could explain any programming or any uses of the roof terrace on the new building.
Yeah, the roof terrace is limited only to the unit that the owner will have for himself. So it wouldn't be open to renters or any other tenants. And there are discussions about whether or not there's a jacuzzi up there or if it's just, you know, an area for his kids to, you know, hang out and play or just dining area. I mean, it's a little unclear. But I did draw in the roof plan. I did put a jacuzzi, and that's mostly for the structural engineer to realize that, you know, there is a possibility that if the owner wanted to put one, that we can design for it to be one, and there wouldn't be a pool. And again, he's a family man. This is not, you know, some single guy throwing parties up there.
Okay, if the board does not have any more questions, we can reopen the public hearing. So anyone on Zoom, raise your hand. Anyone in the audience, please come forward.
Good morning, Matthew Goltanoff with the Miami Design Preservation League. We support this project subject to the staff recommendations. It's a good example of infill construction within an historic district, and the renovation of the original historic building is also a plus. We do think that these projects should consider elevation of the historic buildings as part of the program. However, we do understand that it is not part of this particular plan. Overall, this project will bring much-needed residential housing to the neighborhood. And then finally, I believe Daniel's on Zoom, and he wants to talk more about the resiliency aspects of this project. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I see Daniel Seraldo. Good morning, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Great to be there virtually, and thank you, Matthew, for doing a good job representing us. I did want to chime in after John spoke because I was actually drafting an email to Debbie over the weekend, almost word for word of what John said just now. So I think it's good to see that we're all sort of looking toward that solution-oriented direction with resiliency. You know, as somebody that came, had to go several times to Tallahassee in the last year, one moment that struck me was when I was at a Senate committee and one of the senators said point blank, I went to Miami Beach and I met with the city and they said they're raising all the roads and they don't have a plan for the buildings. And that really kind of made my jaw drop because, you know, then combining that with all of the political maneuvering going on, people are saying there are no solutions to resiliency, then honestly reading a staff report saying it wouldn't be feasible to essentially elevate this building with that has a crawl space by about a foot. You know, that it's something I think, as Debbie mentioned, we've got to get a little more with the policymakers and be more solution oriented. I looked at this building, the new building behind it, there's quite a large ramp that is needed because the original building isn't going to be elevated. So there's that difference. And so I'm not trying to pinpoint this particular project. I know this was already designed. I just think it's good that we continue discussing this. And I hope in the future to see more examples from the staff of these solution-oriented approaches to inspire other property owners. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I see no other members of the public at this time.
Comments from the board? Lindsay?
So I'll reiterate, and I kind of made my comment in my question earlier, but I mean, this building has that vacant, fenced in, you know, somewhat of a blight, if you will, on that street and on that neighborhood, on that block. And so I'm looking forward to seeing this redeveloped. I echo the concerns of my fellow board members and of Daniel regarding the flood elevation. I mean, it is relatively low compared, you know, to where we would like it to be today. But I appreciate the efforts that are being made to preserve this, and I look forward to seeing it brought to fruition.
Thanks. I would just add, you know, along the lines of the, you know, the question of the elevation and the ground plane, you know, something else that comes up in as neighborhoods change is the impact that one building has to its immediate neighbors. So yes, this newer building is higher up. There's a ramp, of course, to get up there. But it also means that the landscape, the ground plane, goes up with it. And so, you know, rather than having a kind of lower garden wall or fence, you know, the neighbors are going to be, you know, facing a, I don't know, 7 or 8 foot tall wall as a result. So, you know, I think this is a perfectly reasonable thing to go ahead with, but it is an opportunity. Maybe we're not fully taking advantage of that opportunity to raise it, but maybe this is something that we can point to on future projects and encourage people to take that step. Would anybody like to make a motion?
I'll move.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay, let me call the roll. Mr. Breslin? Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, we're moving, I think, quicker than expected this morning, but I do see the next applicant. Jamie, are you ready? Because I know we told you 11, but you're ready? Okay, great. So let's move on. Let's see.
Yeah, this is HPB 23-0578, 2301 Normandy Drive. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the partial demolition, renovation, and restoration of the existing building, site improvements, the construction of an attached addition, and variances from the off-street parking regulations and setbacks.
Okay, thank you, Jake. So we have the International Inn, which is an individually designated historic site. First, I would like to thank the property owner. If some of the board members will recall, when this particular designation was being proposed at the urging of this board, the owner, you know, was concerned, and she really was very thoughtful in how she proceeded with this process. The process took, you know, a very long time. It took well over a year, working with the city, working with this board, and she eventually became very comfortable with this designation and did not object to the designation. In addition, the city did, and I see Rebecca Schulman is in the audience. Alan Schulman, if you remember, had done a study for the property owner, and that study included possible incentives that the city could offer, which were eventually adopted by the city commission. So this particular property, while it's not before you today, does have somewhat of an overlay in terms of the zoning and the uses allowed. This originally was built as a motel. Since its construction, it has been consistently used as a lodging property. That is a non-conforming use in the RM1 zoning district, which was one of the concerns of the property owner. This, with the city commission adopted legislation, this actually allows this property to move forward to renovate more than 50% of the value and maintain and even increase, subject to certain conditions, the use of this. So, you know, I think this is a great success story. It is a fabulous post-war modern building that I think is such a gem, not only because of the architecture, but because of where it's located. It is located at the very western end of Normandy Drive, and it really serves as a beacon landmark entrance to the city. So when we first met with Jamie, we were delighted to see that this project is somewhat of a small scope of work. The project is to really restore the existing building, to structurally upgrade the existing building, replace doors and windows, and some other small improvements, including the restoration of the original lobby with some minor changes that we noted in our staff report, some reconfiguration of the circulation in and out of the hotel units. There's also a small, approximately 150 square foot addition that is proposed to be constructed on the south side of the building between the existing south building wall. There is a property wall there now and the existing decorative breeze block site wall. This small, very modest addition will allow for the expansion of the existing kitchen, which is, you know, very important when trying to put a more upscale hospitality program in place. So staff is very supportive of the application. The site improvements include the introduction of a new swimming pool. Staff has no concerns about that. With regard to the two requested variances, one is, again, there's a lot of things that when this property was built, have resulted in non-conformances. So this property was built as is historically appropriate for mid-century buildings with a large parking court in the front of the property. They are looking to improve that parking area while still maintaining the parking spaces. But in order to do so, the variance is triggered for the drive aisle. So one of the upgrades in the parking they're looking at doing is to enhance the accessibility, to make the parking area ADA compliant. the reconfiguration of that actually results in a reduction of the interior drive aisle slightly. The currently required drive aisle is 22 feet. The applicant is proposing 18 feet, so the request is for a 4-foot variance. However, the existing driveway, it also does not meet that 22 feet. It's 20 feet 11 inches. So they're not reducing it significantly from what it is now. Staff has no objection to that. We do believe that the retention of the existing contributing building does create practical difficulties. We also believe that the current ADA requirements, which are required by federal and state law, do result in the need for the variance. So we are supportive of that. The remainder of the variances, which are four, are specific to the new small addition and an FPNL transformer. So two of them are for the proposed FPNL transformer, and two are for the new small addition. With regard to the small addition, as we noted previously, there's an existing kind of breeze block site wall. This addition is not encroaching further than that wall, so the impact will be minimal, if any. However, walls are permitted to be within setbacks. Enclosed areas are not, so that is resulting in the request for the variance. So we do find that the retention of the existing building, this modest expansion, in keeping with the existing setback of the existing site wall, which is also a significant architectural feature, do justify the variances. The variances related to the FPNL transformer, which are 4 and 5, we did not find that the hardship criteria or practical difficulties have been satisfied. There is an alternate location for the transformer shown on the plans, which would comply. And we do believe that the transformer could be accommodated on the site without disrupting the historic building and without requiring variances. So we are not supportive of those two variances. But overall, we want to thank the owner. We want to thank the architect. Jamie has been involved with this International Inn for many years. He was also involved and has a relationship with the owner through the designation process. So we are thrilled that this this building is getting a much-needed renovation and are very supportive of the application.
Welcome.
The owner is also on Zoom, I think, and I think...
Let's see, Ricky.
And also, I didn't get sworn in.
Okay, sure. Can you raise your right hand? Anyone else who's not been sworn in, you can raise your right hand, too. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I affirm.
Thank you.
Yes.
And actually, before you begin, I skipped a step here. Does the board have any questions for staff?
Yeah, I just quickly had a couple questions. One was, if you can point out where the electrical equipment, I wanted to make sure I knew what you were looking at.
So let me get the page number.
A1.
It's on the last page, which is, V1.2.
Oh, V1.2, okay.
They are identifying an alternate location. We've looked at that alternate location and have determined that that would not require the variances. And so we do believe that it would be practical and reasonable to locate it without the variances.
So that's moving it east. That's on the east back of where it says back. No, it's not back of house. I don't know why I'm having so many difficulties figuring out where exactly this is. Okay, where are those rooms? Up there, I see. Isn't this, so you believe the one on the, to the east, is the preferred one. On V.
Well, we do believe that it.
I'm not arguing. I'm just trying to.
Yeah, we believe it's preferred primarily because it wouldn't require any variances. So if you look at A1.0, which is the overall site plan.
Yeah. Yes. Isn't it located, proposed transformer? Isn't that where it says, isn't that the site that you're.
Well, that's. The applicant is requesting the variance to locate it. I guess it's to the
east.
Closer to Bay Drive, closer to the sidewalk on Bay Drive.
Oh, I see.
I mean, they've given you two options.
Yeah.
And of those two options, staff is recommending that it be set back behind the building.
So the one that's where it's located on A1.0 and
is what?
A1.1 is what you prefer.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Correct.
Okay. And the other question, just a clarification question, is that you mentioned that the screen, the design of the screen element proposed to be located in front of the likely mosaic tile accent will be further developed. Which drawing can I find?
That's within the lobby area.
Okay.
And basically our concern was we do believe that mosaic wall is part of the original architecture. And, you know, the board has approved screening elements as interior design features previously. What our concern is, we just want to make sure that it still allows the mosaic to be revealed. And this can be done by, you know, setting it off the floor and off the ceiling, having a certain level of transparency. And that's...
It's actually in a separate package. That's the ID drawings. It's sheet ID 1.07.
Which one? What number?
ID 1.07.
Okay, let me see if I can find that. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right, let me see. All right, I'll find it. Thank you.
Okay, any additional questions for staff?
Yeah, I have a question about the proposed order attached to the staff report.
Okay.
On page 4 of 7, it addresses the variance, and it mentions that the applicant has submitted plans and documents. The application indicates the following as they relate to the requirements of section 2.8.3A of the land development regulations. What is section 2.8.3A of the land development regulations? Each time we go through applications for variances, section 118-353D lists those criteria for the variances, and in the proposed order, it lists those 8 criteria, mentions that the plans indicate the following. But what is the, first of all, what is that section 2.8.3A? Is that an error in the proposed order?
It is not an error. On June 1st of this year, the new land development regulations went into effect. So the previous land development regulations in the city code, which include Chapter 118, are no longer applicable to any project in the city. This is the new section number of the resiliency code that was adopted and went into effect on June 1st. So all of the section numbers, if you'll notice in the report, including the certificate of appropriateness section numbers, are different than they were previously. The information contained within the sections is primarily the same.
So the substance of the variance law is the same?
We did override our previous LDRs. Those are no longer in effect, and we have a new code at this point.
But the substance of the law is the same, just the numbering has changed?
Correct. The variance criteria did not change at all.
Okay. Well, I hope we can hear from the applicant where in the plans and documents the application indicates that those criteria are satisfied.
Okay. Should we turn it over to the applicant for their presentation?
Yes, welcome. Thank you. Could Ricky start,
yes, Ricky.
Please?
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you guys today. This project has been in the works for many years. We've met with so many stakeholders in the community. We recognize how important this building is, and we believe that once this project is completed, this is really going to set off a renaissance for the North Beach area. You know, we've owned this property as a family for many years, and I plan to be here for many more decades to come. So thank you for giving us the opportunity, and I'll just let Jamie take it from here. Thank you so much.
Hey, my name is Jamie Moshestraz, architect, Studio 3, offices 220 71st Street, Suite 201, Miami Beach, Florida, 33141. First of all, chair and board, thank you for taking the time. Staff, thank you so much for being so helpful. We would literally not been able to do it without you all. I know I drove you all pretty crazy the entire process. I'm going to go briefly through everything, and then this way we'll save more time if there's any questions. As we know, this is our existing building, International Inn, on Normandy, on the west side of the island. This is the view from the bridge, which is the most prominent. This is the entrance view with the sign and all of that. What we're proposing, this is a conceptual that what we are proposing. And as you can see in this, we have the kitchen extension where we're taking in where that screen wall is, that small one, so we're not changing the footprint. Replacement of all the storefront, window, doors, everything is going to be replaced completely new. All the glazing is going to be insulated. There's all new exterior lighting. All the railings are going to be fully replaced to be co-compliant. I'll show you the details for that later. There will be a new retractable canopy system over the dining area in the back of the pool deck. New landscaping throughout the site, and one of the big ones is elevating the entire pool deck up to at least the finished floor of our building, and a new seawall, new drainage system, and everything. So we're trying to do as much as we can within the extent of the building. This is a view from Normandy and Bay Drive. This is our new proposed view, and from here what you can see, again, is the new lighting, the new entrance. Instead of a porte-cochere, we're turning it. Already it's such a low height, and there have already been trucks that drove into it and skimmed the bottom, so we're turning that into a pedestrian entrance plaza with landscaping, seating, a new lighting element there as well. You also see where the small kitchen extension is on the side. And then also something else that's important, all the existing catwalks on the second floor, because of the motel service from the outside to get to the rooms, those are all going to be converted to private balconies for each room with the introduction of an interior corridor on the second floor. This is the current pool deck area and proposed. You can see also, again, with the private balconies and railings, and then all on the ground floor units, on the pool deck area, also have private gardens, just as if they have the private balconies upstairs, whatever we could do minimally to also help increase room rates as well. So also, again, new pool deck. There's going to be a new ramp to the dock, new bulkhead, and everything on the exterior. Just to go briefly, some interesting historical things. This is a pre-rendering, a rendering from pre-construction. Actually, it was also in, it was Indiana newspaper. I mean, like, it really made the news that this building was coming. An important part from here is to see, besides some of the funky features they never did, like a 75-foot pylon in the front of the canopy, this was street front originally, which now we have a vacant lot, which is FDOT, that they unfortunately don't maintain very well. This is aerial we found from 1968 that does show the road right up next to the building. And the reason why I'm harping on that is just from the point of that addition is, you know, this is originally, it was a street front building before they vacated and built the new causeway. This is back when it was originally named the Carnival Motel, famous postcard. And we have other examples you'll see in the pamphlet from the historical research. On the existing site and the existing plans, we are overall, we're a 71-room hotel. There is currently a small cafe on the bottom, and there's a pool in the rear, parking in the front, basically all the programming stays the same. Proposed, like we mentioned, all new landscaping. What's important to note is a lot of these landscape planters were incorporated from some sketches we found in Melvin Grossman's original design. Some of these, like, kind of funky angular pieces that we saw were in there and never built. So we're bringing that in. You see the entrance plaza. We will be going from 71 to 69 rooms. As the first room on the parking on both floors, we're kind of using it as a flex space, meaning like if we need more back of house for the restaurant, storage, walk-in, fridge, freezer, long-term, upstairs, same thing. We're incorporating an elevator, and I'll show you more when we get into the lobby plans. But here is just to show that on the second floor, we have that new interior corridor, which is how we're resolving the new private balconies. And then all, even those smaller rooms, the parking lot size, meet the minimum required unit size. Showing landscape, again, generally, and if any specific questions, you can let us know. It's all new hardscape plan, new landscaping throughout the entire site. It's really, it's not very, it's simple. It's very simple in design, but, like, it is very lush. What ULU, Rudolph Sierra, the landscape architect, has designed, which is going to be very exciting for the property compared to what it is now. And you see with the landscape elevations, we're kind of maintaining that existing kind of rhythm it had on the water of all the palm trees kind of lined up against the water. On the left side is the first floor. On the right side is the second floor. What you can the big part is to see is how we're taking over all of those back use rooms next to the cafe. This is why the FPL vault's located there, which is why we're locating it outside to gain more space to the interiors. The electrical panels, mechanical rooms, all this can be better optimized by locating it somewhere else. So we gain all that space back that we can now put a proper trash room, a larger kitchen, a more efficient cafe, redoing the space by, like, keeping the phone booths. We have larger, more compliant bathrooms for the lobby and restaurant. Introduction of a new elevator, relocating the front desk back to the front where it originally was. And then upstairs, there will be a bar and just more of a seating area. And you see also the elevator, a new unisex restroom for the public for upstairs. They don't have to go up and down to the main restroom. And then the corridor to the other rooms. This is currently what is the interior lobby from the main view. This is the conceptual rendering and conceptual design from Sean Saladino, which shows restoring the location of the original front desk back to the front. You can see where the new elevator is. The flooring, stairs, planters, anywhere where we have the original terrazzo, the intent is to keep and restore as much as possible. And I guess I mentioned outside, all the railings are going to be replaced new to be code compliant. This is just mostly just to show you that the footprint really does, even from this isometric view, stays the same. We're not really modifying greatly the building at all. The mechanical elements, again, because the site is so tight, will be on the roof and be screened in a similar design manner as the balcony, so it the design language kind of makes sense. Here you see the railings. They've been heavily modified to what they originally were. Originally, just where those, like, two teal ones are, it was just a two-post system. And these precast concrete vertical balusters, a lot of that is failing right now. And so we're proposing to replace everything. We have a new design where we're just trying to re-highlight back just the two elements. So it looks as much as it originally did with very thin elements to fill in the blanks for the code compliance. But from afar, from when you're sitting, you'll hopefully be able to see right through it, and really it'll read in the original intent.
Jamie, you have 2 minutes remaining.
Okay, thank you. The interiors, the handrails were just keeping the same pattern and raising, and then bottom you can see the screenage. Coloring materials, everything stays the same. All the new window systems are going to be insulated impact. The rooms are going to have all new air conditioning units. We're going to relocate them centered with all the windows, because right now they're staggered all over the place, and they'll be flush from the outside. All those window systems will not be fake mullions. They're all individual windows as it is now to continue that look, and ideally also to keep each room has a little operable window. This just shows the specific of going into the screen wall from that area and how we're using that space. This is a parking lot. The real intent of making that drive aisle smaller, as you see in green, it allows us just to get a minimal planter, 18 inches, so that headlights coming in for those first rooms, people aren't bothered in trying to help screen the cars from the rooms. So that's really the intent there. And just to explain the transformer pad, yes, there is a, we have two options. That first one is there is a code compliant, meets the setback option right at the end of the parking lot. However, that 3 feet around it, these are about 5.5 feet tall. You can't have anything as per FPL, so we can't screen it in any manner. If we locate it along the sidewalk, we're able to have more room to screen it. We can continue the property fence in front of it, put landscaping on different sides of it, and also FPL requires an easement for them to maintain, and it would be much easier for them to maintain along the street edge where they would have access right away as opposed to this really tight parking lot for them to get to. You know, however, we do understand, you know, there is a code-compliant non-variance option available, you know, but we do feel strongly it would be better suited along away from the facade so, you know, when you walk into the main entrance, you don't see it. You know, it will be properly screened from the streets and from the main entrance, which we think is a benefit. And I've seen elsewhere on Normandy multifamily properties that have transformer pads in the front setback, which is most likely FPL coming in and just installing it themselves, you know, not in a pre-permitted fashion and all of that kind of stuff.
Jamie, your 10 minutes are up. Would you like to request additional time?
Nope. Okay. Just finished. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you for your presentation. Usually what we'll do now is we'll ask the board members to put forth any questions they might have, get them all out, and then give you a chance to respond to all of them. So I imagine there might be a few, so we'll try to put them all out.
Well, I'm going to say, you know, I really like this project. I live right next door to what was the Ankara Hotel, and when it was redone by Aloft and now the gates, the very rakish entrance that you're keeping, then they added an extra story all the way around, and it just sort of gets lost. Mm. And you've maintained the integrity of the building, and I give you a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. Any questions? If not, I have a minor one, which is, you know, seeing that the parking is tight, knowing you're dealing with these, you know, the challenge of the low roof, so the cars are not moving through that new pedestrian space anymore. I'm just wondering if you could describe, you know, for vehicles coming in to pick up or drop off, it looks like at the corner you've got two curb cuts, right, two points of entry. Have you looked at stacking or, you know, the ability for cars to come in and drop off without having to turn into that parking lot where it's going to be difficult to turn back out?
Sure. So currently, technically, it's the F dot lot right next to, you can see the mouse. This is where their property lot ends. So here is the F dot. That's their piece of property. He does have a lease agreement, and that was about it. They were able to negotiate that he's able to maintain the asphalt driveway as it is, only in asphalt, and that's it. So we have that layout, and the intent is that you can come in, pull up to the side, or also wait another car from here before leaving back into the causeway, so you don't have to go into the parking lot. Also, the way the parking lot is designed, it's one way. So when you pull in, you come out through a gate. The fence and gate, this is already there now that we did last time with the Shulman's. And so once you pull in, you pull right back out, you go to Bay Drive, and then you can go back onto the causeway.
I have a question. Just back to the proposed order where it says that the application includes plans and documents that show that the criteria for variances have been satisfied. I'd like to know where in the application that it shows that the criteria for variances under the law have been met.
I mean, I'm not prepared to really know the technical answer for that. You know, we have all of our additional variance sheets of drawings that highlight the code requirements and what the proposed requested variances are on each one of those sheets, as well as in the letter of intent outlining it all, you know, and with my assumption that, you know, we went for first submittal, we had the comments back from staff and then submitted final submittal, you know, that that would have sufficiently met, you know, to be able to go to the board.
Where is the variance? It's where at the end sheet?
Of architecture. There's, so after the A's, you'll see V, V1, 1.1, 1.2.
Page. Okay. Oh, so there's three pages. Okay.
As well on Z1, you have the city zoning data sheet that has required and proposed and formats provided by the city. The Z's are in the beginning. And then also in the letter of intent, and there's more language.
The letter of intent. Now, I see in the letter of intent where it describes the variances that are requested, and I also see in the application in the last three pages, V1.0, V1.1, and V1.2, where it describes the variances requested, but I'm wondering where in the application does it show that the criteria in order to grant a variance is met. The criteria are, and it's listed in the order, special conditions and circumstances exist which are peculiar to the land structure building involved. Special conditions and circumstances do not result from the action of the applicant. That granting the variance requested will not confer on the applicant any special privileges that is denied. I mean, in fact, as... the city attorney mentioned that although the numbering has changed in the law, the substance hasn't changed, and it says in the substance that the board shall find that these criteria have been satisfied. In order to make a finding, we need to have evidence before us that these criteria have been satisfied. I'm just looking for something so that I can say, okay, there's in the application or the presentation, there's something showing that the requirements for variance have been satisfied. So that's just, this is the question part now, I guess not the comment part. My question is, where is it? Where is it? Because the proposed order says the plans and documents indicate, and I'm wondering, where is it? That the plans and documents indicate that the criteria are satisfied.
Okay, thanks for the question. Debbie, is this something you could help us with?
So when we evaluated this project, you know, part of that requirement is the plans, which have been submitted. The plans include a significant amount of work on the restoration of the existing contributing building, which is not applicable to any other property within this immediate area because it is a historic site, right? This is not a historic district. And it is a very unique situation with non-conformances that exist that were original, which Some could argue all of those nonconformances are also historically significant that the board would not want to see go away. While we do not regulate use, the Secretary of Interior standards actually encourage historic buildings to maintain their original use. So we, you know, when we, if you look at the plans, you look at the historic documentation, Mr. Stewart, you're right, it may not be spelled out as individual responses, but reviewing the plans that include the retention of the contributing building, issues with current federal requirements for ADA for the parking, staff did believe that this the plans that were submitted do further those criteria and do satisfy those criteria.
Okay. We have one more question from Lindsay.
I would like to hear more. I mean, you detail a little bit in your, I think, final submittal why you're seeking the variance to FPL, for the FPL vault. I understand staff is not recommending it, but I'd like to know a little bit more about the concerns with the conforming site, right, versus the non-conforming piece, based in part on, you know, Department of Interior standards preserving the front side of the and also making it habitable for everyone that's staying at the hotel. I don't know what we're going to refer to it now, but thank you.
Sure. So the FPL transformer pad, it can be something that's located inside. We could take care of a transformer vault interior. It takes up a lot of space and extra requirements where we're very tight on space. So we would have, that's the reason why we're looking for a transformer pad outside to begin with. So that's one. The only spot that meets the requirements by FPL that we could even fit it in and zoning requirements is right there at the end of the parking lot, which as you pull in, it would be, you would see it straight at the end. 3 feet around it, it's 65 inches tall. 3 feet around it, you're not allowed to have anything except like sod or ground cover, and that's it per FPL, so they can maintain it. We'd also have to install additional bollards because it's at the end of the parking lot to help protect the transformer from a car driving right into it. So that being said, what we were trying to do was, well, we also have this other large front yard, literally a front yard, which is fully within the front setback, where all the way at the, if we put it located all the way at the end, then it's enough space that there will be a chance to, at the very least, continue our property fence all the way to help screen it from the street and allow us to screen it from the parking lot and the main entrance of the building, as well as that's a secondary entrance where currently and there will be also trash storage and a secondary entrance on the side of the building that's fully screened in as well. So it's a basically, it's already a utility, kind of a strip to begin with, and it would be an ideal way to allow them the easement that they require to properly service it, as opposed to having to maneuver through a pretty tight parking lot as it is now. And, I mean, that's really it. It's just to allow the better easement allowance for FPL for maintenance, and so that we can screen this from the entrance and from the street properly. So it's not an impact. I mean, because we haven't heard from, maybe it's allowed, but usually these are green and the building's white. We've put in requests to FPL if any other colors are allowed. They don't respond. It's been probably about 6-8 months already. So we're still trying that route, you know, anything we can. You know, but also the precedent is, in my mind, is there are numerous transformer pads, specifically on Normandy. I live down the street. That are in the front setback facing the street, you know, not even screened with anything in some cases. In some cases, you know, people after the fact will put hedges right up next to it in contrast to what FPL, their requirement is.
So can I just follow up on this, Lindsay? Okay. All right. Can you put the image back up, please? So the location you prefer is the one that's surrounded by green.
Green. Okay. Yes.
And I'm the other location. There's a historic sign above that location. Are you planning to keep that sign?
That one, we are not keeping. We haven't found that in original drawings. Those two, there's one on that side and one also facing the pool, but we are maintaining the neon lit ones that are on the main roof of the building. Right. Those aren't illuminated.
But that's the one that you see when, because Bay Drive is only one way there.
Yeah.
It's one way to the north.
Correct.
So you can't kind of do that loop and get back. You have to go. You can't get right back out onto the causeway from there.
Yeah,
you'd from have anywhere to go. In your parking area. You have to go in.
No, once you're in the parking area, yes, you have to go out.
You have to go out and around through that other street and then down to the traffic light. Are you going to do anything when you repair or restore that wall with any signage there at all?
No,
site where you have the.
No, currently right now, there's a lot of, we put in already new landscaping there.
Yeah.
So there's already really lush, tall landscaping that's
yeah, at but that it's not facade as tall already. As a sign, yet. Okay.
There's, you'll see on Z3.1, mm-hmm. picture 2. So we would have to remove that new landscaping to accommodate the transformer pad.
Right. Which means where the sign is, that sign would be really visible. And I'm just thinking everything is pointing in that direction because all traffic goes in that direction. It's not like you're on a site where you can go out either. You can go out either way, but you're really going to be coming in from the south, going north, and you're parking along there too. So. I don't know. Maybe this is a question for staff because I was really kind of wondering whether the other location closer to the road, the one that they originally proposed, might be a better location because it doesn't block that kind of critical corner, which has a volumetric presence and it also has a sign if it's...
Yeah, and you know, we understand, especially we're very sensitive to because we know that FPNL does not like to have things screening their equipment, that they will have more room in that location for screening, which we think is positive. It was our recommendation is purely, you know, a result of reviewing this in accordance with the hardship criteria.
Right.
It's when an applicant, and I appreciate that you did this very much, but when they show an alternative in the plans, that wouldn't require the variances, it's hard to make a strong case for the variance. But in terms of the design and appropriateness of what Mr. Strauss is explaining in their preferred location, I don't have any objections.
Right, okay. All right, thank you.
No problem.
Oh, and about the screening, you didn't mention that in your presentation, the one that the staff asked you to look at, the interior screen element. I guess it's the one that's proposed along the, is it along the stair? That, is it that screen?
Yes.
So you kind of see the, you see the reception desk on the right, it's an image, and then you see the stair on the left.
Right. So the interiors were, you know, to up to a conceptual level, you know, and we're glad to work on any element with staff to resolve from there, and it's not an element we're 100% tied to anyways.
If we're done with questions, I guess we'll move on. Thank you, Jamie.
No problem.
And we will open it to public hearing.
Before the public comment, are there any disclosures? Oops, seeing none. Okay, members of the public, I see Tanya Bott on Zoom. Good morning, Tanya.
Hi, Tanya. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Good morning. 3 minutes.
I'm speaking purely as a resident, not in any official capacity. I live at 900 Bay Drive, apartment 1023. And even before I lived in North Beach, driving in and out on the 79th Street Causeway, the International Inn was just a magic, even in its not pristine state, was a magic piece of Miami Beach. And I am so thrilled to be part of this discussion and witnessing your thoughtful comments and the work that Jamie's doing with Ricky to bring it back to its glory. I now live in North Beach and I go past it all the time, and I think it will make an immeasurable impact for the greater good of the community. I think it's really important that we protect and encourage enhanced usage of our historical and architectural gems, and this is certainly one of those. I remember when Mark Samulin, late Commissioner Samulin, suggested to me as president of MBU that we take a listen to what Ricky had to say about this project. It was a little bit of a problem in terms of the way there were not ideal uses happening there by people who were staying, and to give it a shot. And that was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago now. And I'm really psyched to see that this is moving along. And I encourage the board to give a full-throated vote of support for this project, and let's bring it back to its glory. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Tanya.
Good morning, Matthew Goltanoff with the Miami Design Preservation League. We're pleased to see the International Inn receiving the investment and renovation that it needs. We support the variance request for the power company transformer pad, and we're thrilled that the property will be restored to its former glory. And this is a great example of working with the property owner alongside community partners. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. See no other members of the public wishing to comment. We can close the public hearing.
Okay, thank you. Board member comment? Someone like to start us off?
Well, based on, Debbie, what you said, you're loosely saying that you don't approve 4 and 5, but that the location that they have proposed is really a better location, but it does require variances. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have no objection to the design and the siting and the appropriateness of the option that requires variances.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I see that there's a lot of emotional support for this project because of the property, the history, and that it's getting well-deserved attention, and the design is really pleasant to look at. That's why I think that we would be better served and applicants would be better served if before they come to us, the staff would let an applicant know when they're asking for a variance that they should be prepared to show us that the 8 criteria in the city code for granting a variance have been met. So we can say, okay, the requirements of the law have been met and we approve of the variance, because basically what a variance is an applicant saying we want something that the law doesn't allow. And in this case, it's with regard to setbacks and the placement of this transformer. And I guess the variance, sometimes they may seem very innocuous. And at times, it's a project like this. It's such a nice design. It's such an important project. Why not grant an innocuous variance? I have no problem with voting in favor with a variance so long as there's something in the record that shows that they've satisfied the requirements of the law. Last time we were here on a variance, I asked the applicant the same question because they didn't go through the variances, and they were able to show, fortunately, hey, look at our cover letter. Here's where we go into each of these 8 different criteria. And I made the motion to grant the variance, to approve the variances in that case, because the application and the presentation did have evidence in it to support why the project was not going to, why the property could not have a reasonable use without the requested variance, because that's essentially what a variance is for, that somebody says, is able to show that by following the law, they're not going to be able to make a reasonable use of their property, and that in order to make a reasonable use of their property, a variance needs to be granted. That's why the variances are in use not only in Miami Beach, but probably all around the country, because sometimes it's just unfair the way that a law would be applied, that somebody cannot make a reasonable use of their property. I agree with all the sentiments expressed about appreciation for this very, very thoughtful design, but I would like to be also able to vote in favor of the variances, but I don't see anything in the record that shows that the legal criteria have been met, and I think it's a bad, not only a precedent, but this isn't a precedent, because there are so many precedents each meeting that when there are variances that come before the board, where the applicant just doesn't even go through how the criteria have been met, because I think that the way it's presented us by the city staff, where they're just talking about, well, there's some difficulties, there's some hardships, and this is a great project and everybody's in support of it, that we're really missing the point, that's not supposed to be when a variance is approved, when there's community support or it's no big deal. It's very clearly spelled out in the law. And I don't see why we shouldn't be encouraging applicants to be prepared when they come before us to show that it's met, so that they can get every board member's vote in favor of it, a variance, including mine, because I'd like to vote in favor of it. But I don't see that there's anything to support it in the record.
Are you referring to one of the variances in particular or all of them?
I'm referring to all of them, because the only variance analysis is on pages 8 and 9 of the staff report. And the variance analysis talks about what they're requesting, the parameters of it, but it doesn't refer to the criteria in the law and how these requested variances are needed in order for there to be a reasonable use of this property. Staff explained about existing nonconformities, that there are special conditions about the property. Okay, but we need more details, because this is fact-driven as to whether a variance is warranted.
Thank you, Stuart. Would anybody else like to comment?
Sure. I'll just say that I really appreciate what you guys are doing with this property. It's a very important, obviously part of the city of Miami Beach, a very important kind of success story for this board. And I follow the staff's findings, because the professionals we count on to provide us with findings that justify the granting of the variances. I would also fold into those findings the granting of the variances to place the pad, the transformer, more to the north and closer to the street, as the applicant has requested, knowing just how that corner in there is a pretty critical corner, whether it's signage or landscape or both, to the experience of the building. And I would follow the staff's recommendation and move the. I'm not moving right now. And also suggest that we consider folding into the staff's professional findings on the variance justifications the variances for approving the variances of number 4 and 5.
Okay. Thank you, John. Lindsay?
So the variances that are requested, and there are five, but they speak to two specific things. One is the FPL, the pad for the transformer to be located in a certain area, and then the other one is to reduce the drive through the parking lot so that they can maintain ADA conformance. So as, you know, those are the two things that we're looking at. There are five different variances required in order to achieve those two things. Staff is in favor of three, but not the last two, I believe. Largely because they've presented us with an alternative location for the pad for the FPL transformer. As to the ADA, and as to Stuart's comments, I think we as a board, with staff's guidance, can make findings even if they are not explicitly listed. Here is why I satisfy this criteria, by looking at all of the evidence presented to us, and that evidence is the testimony of the person who stands before us, the documents that are provided to us in our packages, as well as our independent knowledge. So from a standpoint of the ADA, you know, for these historic hotels to be ADA compliant is a feat. And so to make a small variance as far as the ADA, I'm fully in support of that. So I want to point that out first. As for the FPL vault, I would defer a little bit to my architectural colleagues here, but I tend to agree that the approach that every vehicle coming into this building, as it was a motor inn, right? I mean, that was the whole idea, is you came via car. This was at the time that they were established, you know, people were getting in their cars and driving, and you know, we've lost a lot of that, right? With the interstates, everyone moved off of, for example, I'll use Biscayne Boulevard as an example, where we had a lot of these motor inns. And so to maintain that and preserve that and not obstruct the view to the front side of the hotel like that as they're coming into the entrance, I think is a very important part of the preservation of this building and of the preservation of its aesthetic, which is part of why we're here, right? And preserving that history. So if the variance, and I guess I have a question for staff, but for the fact that they were designated, would they be before us for this variance? Would they be able to do this if they weren't a historically designated property?
They would still require the variance, but it would not be under the jurisdiction of this board.
So they would still require a variance, okay. But I think considering the entire picture, you know, the criteria that they have to satisfy, while I appreciate staff's position that they provide us with an alternative location that works and fits within the code, makes it hard to approve it. I do think that the special conditions and circumstances, one of those special conditions and circumstances is the fact that it is a historic building that we are trying to preserve, both in view and in, I'm lacking for a word here, but you know, the approach, the use of it. Yeah, we're preserving a non-conforming use in this residential neighborhood because we think it is that important. And so to put before the applicant an obstacle that kind of detracts from that use and the intention of it originally, I think is somewhat problematic. And so I think satisfies the special circumstances that are peculiar to this particular property. I don't think it's granting any, you know, special privilege that others couldn't come before another board and seek if they were able to show these same special circumstances. It's the minimum granted that will, they're just asking for to move it into a space that is nearer the street. I think it obviously, as he's mentioned, that it does provide for better access for FPL. And so for those reasons, I'm actually, contrary to staff, in support of that variance. And so I wanted to make that very clear. You know, here are the criteria that are laid out. They are laid out in staff's report. But I think we as a board are able to make that decision. For an applicant, quite frankly, to stand up and say, we meet the criteria, and Stuart, you've brought this up before, that they say, yes, I meet this criteria, yes, I meet that criteria, that doesn't satisfy anything as far as I'm concerned. It says that they believe they satisfy it, but we have to make the finding, and staff has to provide that finding to us, or we have to, you know, make it on our own. And so that's where I am on that. And so I believe that given the entirety of the circumstance, that we should support the variance. No offense to my staff colleagues here. I'm done.
Great. Thank you, Lindsay. Laura, would you like to chime in?
Thank you so much for the presentation. One of my favorite buildings, honestly, in Miami Beach, so very happy and thankful to ownership as well for continuing to hopefully improve this property. I think the way that you utilize the porte-cochere for pedestrians is super creative, and I loved that update, as well as the interiors and landscapes, so I hope that gets more developed as the concept develops. The railings, I totally understand the life safety issue. If there was a way to reincorporate the physical historic material on the site where it's not compromising life safety, I think, that would be a very nice touch and go a long way. They are beautiful railings. My interpretation of practical difficulty is, based on the Secretary of Interior standards, which is the root of all the legality of historic preservation. So I see the location and setting and potentially workmanship as the justification for the variance. I know FPL is tough. I wish, there needs to be some special conference between historic and FPL, because this is always an issue, and it's a tug of war, and every case is a case by case. But, I think I definitely agree that all the variances are justified and would be in support of them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Laura. I think everybody's excited about this project. Jamie, great set of drawings. It's really beautifully illustrated. And, it's exciting to see kind of fresh take on it. I think putting that corridor through the middle and transforming those outdoor walkways to private balconies is a great kind of solution. I think part of what Lindsay was saying in reviewing, requests for variance, for us, beyond just what's written, the graphic depiction of the project really describes a lot. So when we see, for example, the two potential solutions for the FPL structure, implied in those drawings are a number of considerations. From my point of view, I'd really rather not have that up against the sidewalk, even if there are other cases along the street. It's really preferred to not, embellish the public realm with FPL vaults. But the fact is that it is behind a fence, and I think that goes a long way to kind of screen it. So I see that as a reasonable way to work around it. The big hardship here is that trying to work with a big, complex, historic building. Complex because of its site, how tight it is on the site. It's trying to do a lot of things at once to give, new life, new viability to this building. And, I understand the challenge and, appreciate the effort to limit the variances. And in fact, we haven't talked much about the one-story encroachment into the south setback, but it's done so reasonably right up against that masonry screen that it really causes no impact to the public realm. So I think that there's actually great sensitivity in this proposal, and I would be supportive of all of those variances, actually. But I think Stuart makes a good point again and again, is that, maybe this needs to be more thoroughly flushed out in the written language. And I know that means more work, more man hours on the staff. And we've repeatedly, called for, additional resources for the staff, which clearly does a ton of work here. And so I would take the opportunity to once again say, hey, we need more staff support to, in this case, really flush out the language, to satisfy what you're describing. I do rely heavily on the drawings, and I think the drawings go a long way to depict the challenges. And anyway, I appreciate the presentation once again.
once again. So with that, we've all had a chance to comment. Would someone care to make a motion?
Don't we have to do it as two motions?
That's correct. We would have one motion for the certificate of appropriateness and another for the variances. Do we have a motion? Dueling motion.
I was just asking a question. Go ahead, Lindsay.
You have a question?
You make the motion.
Oh, okay. I thought he was going to make a motion. So I will make a motion. Do we need to do certificate of appropriateness first? Okay. So I will make a motion that we approve the variances, all five requested, and amend the order as required, obviously.
I'll second that.
Okay, let me call the roll. Mr. Stewart.
Yes.
Mr. Reed.
No.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman.
Yes.
Mr. Breslin. Yes. Ms. Lovell.
Yes.
Mr. Lopez.
Yes.
Okay, that passes. Do we have a motion for the certificate of appropriateness?
I'll move to approve the certificate of appropriateness.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Let me call the roll. Mr. Breslin?
Yes.
Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Congratulations. Okay. I had a request earlier to change the order of the next two applications, so I wanted to see if the applicants are agreeing to that. We have two applicants left. We also have lunch delivered. It's a bit early. We have two more applications, so we could get through them and we could take your lunch to go, or we could take a break, whatever the board. Okay. Okay, maybe a 10-minute break. 10 minutes? 11:35. That's fine.
Thanks. We'll take a very quick break here. Thank you. Welcome back to our July meeting of the Historic Preservation Board at the City of Miami Beach. We're going to pick up where we left off with a slight change in order. Debbie, I believe we're moving on to 745 Collins?
Correct.
HPB 23-0582, 745 Collins Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for modifications within the public interior space.
Thank you, Jake. This is a relatively straightforward application, focusing on the public interior space. This particular property is a contributing building designed by L. Murray Dixon and built in 1940 in the streamlined modern style of architecture. This particular property, if some of you have been around for a while, you'll remember in the 90s when Collins Avenue was kind of this really hip retail corridor. So in 1995, this particular building was substantially renovated and converted to retail use. I believe it was the Victoria's Secret. This renovation included the total demolition of the original public lobby, all of the hotel units, and the removal of a substantial portion of the second level in order to introduce this double-height retail space. In 2007, the building was further renovated, including the introduction of a partial one-story rooftop addition, the partial reconstruction of that second floor plate, and the restoration of the Collins Avenue facade. The property is undergoing another change, and the desire is to convert and adaptively reuse the space as a restaurant. Therefore, the applicant is requesting approval of a new interior design within this original public space, which does include the removal of a portion of the second floor plate. There are specific provisions in the city code that deal with the amount of floor plate that can be removed within the MXC zoning district. This is within the architectural district in the MXC. The applicant may remove up to 20% of the floor plates. Staff has worked very well with the architects and have determined that those plans do comply. We have no objection to that additional demolition that they're proposing, and we are supportive of the application and very much look forward to this portion of Collins Avenue being reinvigorated with a new high-quality restaurant tenant. So we are supportive of the application and are recommending approval. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for staff? No? Seeing none? We'll invite the applicant to make their presentation. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Alan Schulman with offices at 7300 Biscayne Boulevard in Miami. I'm very pleased to be here today representing the Fifth Street Group. We are here with our whole team, so that means ourselves as well as our client, Patrick Whalen of the Fifth Street Group, and also Norberto Rosenstein, who will be our architect of record, and Mackenzie Build, and I'm here also with my partner, Rebecca Stanier Schulman. So maybe I can switch to the presentation. Thank you. So Fifth Street Group, which is based in Charleston, has a great experience working in historic districts and on historic buildings and being part of the renaissance of those historic districts as well. They currently have locations in Charlotte, Charleston, and Nashville, and they're adding two other locations, of which Miami, this will be their first one in Miami. And on the right-hand side, you see their Charleston restaurant, which is in an old decommissioned church, desacralized church. As you may know, the site is in the Ocean Drive Collins Avenue Historic District. We're also in the MXC District, as Debbie mentioned. Here is a postcard of the original building by Lawrence Murray Dixon and a document of that building in 1985 prior to its renovation. And actually, there's an intervening step in the history of this building. So in 1940, the building was built. In 1995, Lane Pettigrew Karp did a full renovation of the building. At that time, they removed all floor plates. They built commercial floor plates at different heights, different elevations from the original floor plates. And the building was turned into a big retail space for Express, which I think was a limited brand. And then our office in 2007 slightly reconfigured that space, adding most of the second floor back in, or adding second floor plate back into the floor, and then also adding an addition on the third floor, which is set back quite a bit, which was their back of house. What we're proposing to do today has no effect on the front, no architectural effect on the front facade. We're going to keep the front facade exactly as it is. We're going to keep all the facades exactly as they are. We're adding one door on the south facade on the side yard, a very minor change. So really what we're talking about is the reconfiguration of the interior space. And just to clarify again, none of that original floor plate is original anyway. It's like those were all, it's steel and concrete with beams and columns. So what we're planning to do is just remove a modest amount, because we are limited by that 20% rule, of that reconstructed floor plate and put in kind of an atrium in the center that will serve the use of the restaurant. So here you can see a kind of a footprint of the existing hotel with the rooftop addition. You can see it's set back quite a bit. We have existing and proposed FAR diagrams. The building looks something like this. When we renovated the building in 2007, we restored many of the facade components, all the facade components. And we, as you can see on the back of the building, the addition was clad in mosaic tile. So it's clearly differentiated from the original historic building material. These are the side yards. The windows on the side yard had already been filled in with glass block. We left the glass block there. These are the interior views of the space that became Victoria's Secret. So at that time in 2007, a new stair was put in and much of the floor plate added back in. So that's just like above what you see here in these images. We're planning to keep that stair. We're planning to keep the terrazzo floor. We're basically just removing a piece of the floor plate above. I'm just going quickly through this. This is the third floor rooftop addition that was added in 2007, which is basically a back of house space. And here's the building in context. So in terms of demolition on the ground floor, I mean, we're removing some of the materials at the back. We are mainly leaving most of the building infrastructure, stairs, elevator, FPL vault, all that is remaining intact on the front facade. Everything's remaining intact. There was a ramp that was added. That's remaining intact. There's a terrazzo terrace out there. That's remaining intact as well. So we are trying to basically be sort of limited. Here you can see in dark hatch the areas of the second floor that we are removing. So we're basically leaving a portion at the facade. And then we're removing a portion to make the atrium, but connecting that front facade portion back with a floating bridge. And as you'll see, that kind of ties into this double height bar concept that's going to be coming as well. And this is the existing third floor, which was added in 2007. And the rooftop. I would say the main change on the outside of the building would be some additional rooftop mechanical equipment for the restaurant, but added on the portion of the building that's set way back from Collins Avenue. So here is the floor plan of the restaurant, and basically what's happening is that the front is kind of the terrazzo floor, the stair that are already there. We're adding a bar at the south end of the property. We're going to have high top tables in between. And then in the back, there's a series of stepped platforms that go up. There are both stairs and ramps. Connecting those areas, those become dining areas for the restaurant. At the back, there are the back of house, the bathrooms. Interestingly enough, the main kitchen is placed on the second floor. So here you can see the layout of the new atrium, the kitchen layout, and the mezzanines, the dining mezzanines that are placed there. And this is the third floor. I mean, we're adding an office and some other stuff, but it's pretty minor. I believe we're here because of the removal of the floor plate. These are some sections cut through the building, so you can see the rooftop addition. It's also set back from the sides of the building. And here we're cutting longitudinally through the building, and we're looking at the double height back bar, which rises to the roof, and that bridge runs in front of it. And then you can basically see that we're maintaining the existing structure. We're maintaining most of the existing floors. We are raising the floor on those step platforms, going back very slightly. And these are very bare because we haven't done the interior design yet. But you can kind of see what the space will be like. That's the existing stair, non-historic stair, but existing stair, and terrazzo floor, and then this what that double height space will be like, and that bridge leading back to the front of the space. And here we're at the back on the second floor, looking back at the front facade, and you can see that mezzanine helps to break up that internal front facade. Materials are very simple. There would be, on those raised floors, engineered hardwood flooring. Terrazzo, we're leaving, maybe repairing the existing front terrazzo. We're hoping to expose all the steel members that were put into the building in 1995 originally, and those that we may have added in 2007. to create the rest of the second floor, and we're building a steel bridge that connects the front and back. And with that, I'll end, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much. Does the board have any questions for the applicant? Okay, don't see any questions, so thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
We'll move on to public hearing.
Are there any disclosures before I open the public hearing? Nope. Okay, any members on Zoom, raise your hand. Anyone in the audience, please come forward.
Hi again, Matthew Galtanoff, Miami Design Preservation League. We're supportive of this project and happy to see new life being brought into this contributing historic structure. Thank you.
Okay, see no other members of the public wishing to comment.
Okay, thank you. Board members, anybody would like to comment on this project? Stuart?
Sure. Just want to share how I reacted to the design. It looks very exciting. It looks very dramatic. And I think that the people who would use the space, that those are two words that will come to their minds too. Dramatic and exciting. All that big open space and the use of that bridge. And yeah, I enjoy it.
Thank you.
Any others?
Sure. Oh, I was just going to say, I think this is a kind of growth moment for your firm when you're actually renovating your own renovation. Yeah. And I congratulate you on whatever anniversary this might be. So
you meant as a sign of my age.
Well, I didn't want to go there, but no, it's a great project.
Thank you.
Just I'm assuming the Church and Union then is a little minor chain of now five locations, same name in all five locations.
Yeah, actually, so Patrick menu is here if you'd thing. Like to hear more. He traveled here from Charleston.
You're not bringing some special new chef in?
Hi, I'm Patrick Whalen. I'm the business owner. What was the question?
Well, so in other words, you have a set menu for all five. You're not bringing in a chef that's going to make this location uniquely different?
So, no, we do the opposite of the sort of standard model where each city has a replica of the previous menus. We try to source locally. In fact, our chef team has been down here a few times already working with local farmers and fishermen and retailers to put together a list of products that you can source only in the immediate vicinity. That doesn't mean that we won't order, you know, flour or something that comes in from wherever, but we will work closely in each menu. So this would be our fifth of this concept, but each one there's one item that's the same on every menu, and everything else is completely unique to that marketplace.
Very interesting. When I saw Church and Union, it sort of reminded me of Steve Haas having City Hall. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what this is. Maybe this is going to be Steve's new location.
People are frequently confused by our name. They don't know what's happening.
And I'm also assuming, even though the rendering had just high tops, you're going to have some regular tables for people like me that won't sit at a high top. Thank you.
Yeah, most of the tables are regular tables.
I'm excited. I've seen this street kind of go through a few iterations. I wasn't here for the Victoria's Secret or the Limited Express, but Victoria's Secret. So I remember that. So I'm excited to see something, you know, new and different, and welcome the new product as a resident. So I think you've done a great job here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, excited to have any bit of Charleston come our way. We welcome you guys entirely. So thank you. And you're clearly in good hands with Mr. Schulman here. So all the best. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion to approve as presented. Thank you.
Okay, do we have a second?
A second.
Okay, let me call the roll. Ms. Weinstein-Berman? Ms. Weinstein-Berman, yay or nay?
Yay.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Mr. Reed? Yes. Mr. Breslin?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Let us know when it opens.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
The last application is HPB 23-0581, 355 19th Street. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the substantial demolition of the existing building and the construction of an attached addition as part of a new hotel development and one or more waivers.
Great. Thank you, Jake. So this particular project is nearly identical to a previous project that was reviewed and approved by this board in 2019. Unfortunately, at that, you know, shortly after that, the property had some issues, and the owners were never able to obtain a building permit and did not file for the any extensions of time. Therefore, the application was expired, and the applicant is essentially requesting a reapproval of the previous project. So the subject structure, which is the Park Terrace Apartments, was constructed in 1951. It's a post-war modern style building. It is located within the Museum Local Historic District. The current project is a complete redevelopment, which does consist of the introduction of a five-story addition and a rooftop pool deck. In order to construct this ground-level addition, the applicant is requesting a substantial amount of demolition. That would be the entire rear portion of the existing building, as well as approximately 75% of the east wing and 60% of the west wing. Within the two portions of the building that are proposed to be retained, the applicant is proposing to create double height spaces for a hotel lobby and gym. While the amount of demolition is substantial, staff would note that the significant architectural features of the building are primarily located on the portions that are being retained, and they will be restored. In the previous approval, staff had some additional recommendations for restoration. I don't believe those are shown in the plans that you received, but the applicant is going to speak to those, and they have agreed to reintroduce those the decorative screens around the window, which staff believes is important because it's on the primary facade. And you can see in the photograph, the historical photograph, on page 9 of your report, you can see that we have enough documentation in order to accurately represent those. Staff is supportive of the new design of the building, which, you know, we are supportive of this courtyard design. We think that that is very appropriate to this type of garden-style apartment. So we do believe the new design, specifically the siding of it and the massing of it, does honor the legacy of the post-war modern typology. While the new architecture is contemporary in nature and differentiated from the historic portions of the buildings, there are certain elements, including the horizontal overhangs, that really support and celebrate the post-war modern architecture. So we are supportive, and we are recommending approval. I will also note that there are two waivers that are being requested. These are not variances. These are two waivers. One is for the required loading space. In the previous iterations, we had discussions and the board had discussions regarding not wanting to see curb cuts in this particular property. They are required to have two on-site loading spaces for the change of use. However, staff does not believe it's appropriate to locate them on the property and is supportive of the waiver to have the loading spaces on street. There is a requirement that prior to the approval of the building permit, that the parking department has to agree and sign off on the allowance of on-street parking spaces to be used for loading during certain hours. The second waiver is with regard to maintaining the existing non-conformances of the building. The building currently is non-conforming to the parking requirements as well as setbacks. So due to the level of demolition that is occurring on the property, the the only way to retain those existing non-conforming setbacks, which are original and historic to the site, the applicant is requesting a waiver. Staff has no objection. We have found that the project does meet the criteria for the waiver, and we are supportive of that. And that's all I have, but I am happy to answer any questions.
Debbie, in 2019, I was sitting on that side as president of the Collins Park Neighborhood Association supporting this project. Are there any differences at all between 2019 and today? Any changes at all?
Not in the plans that you have in your package. We have our same recommendation, which would include some very minor adjustments, including the reintroduction of the historic elements. But that's what you're looking at today is the same as it
and
was
approved by a board in 2019. Thank
Correct.
You.
Correct.
Any other questions for staff? No? Okay. Welcome.
Good. Just afternoon. Good afternoon. Alfredo Gonzalez, Greenberg Traurig, on behalf of the property owner, Park Hotel LLC. I have owner's reps with me here today, and the architect and his team, Luis Revolta. To answer your first question, yes, in 2019, this project went through several hearings with the HPB. Some members that were here left, came back. So, and the project did start with variances. We had numerous variances because we were providing parking on site and curb cuts. The board and staff had concerns. So the iteration was ultimately approved in 2019, removed the parking, which triggered one of the waivers, a loading zone waiver. And the second waiver we requested, which was the portions we were preserving in order to keep the pieces the board and staff wanted, it needed to have the second waiver approved. So this project was approved, moved into construction drawings. So construction drawings were building permits were submitted to the city, were close to getting approval. Obviously, because of the pandemic, the then lead on this project had a lot of difficulties. The project was delayed. And then by the time they were able to regroup, this order had expired. So they have a permit that has now gone into abandoned status. We're looking to see to try to reactivate it because it was pretty much needing planning sign-off and a lot of the fees to be paid to get it issued. So our submittal is the same as in 2019 that went before the board and they approved with conditions. What we do have is a couple renderings that I'll have Lewis go through which show how those conditions were addressed in the building permit set that planning was reviewing. So we're not asking for anything new. We were just, the only tweaks were addressing the conditions that were part of the order that had to be addressed during the permit phase. And with that, I'll ask Lewis to go quickly through it, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon, Luis Revuelta. Offices in 2950 Southwest 27th Avenue, Suite 110, Coconut Grove. I thought you were on vacation from the board.
Really? Yeah. Sorry to disappoint.
No, on the contrary. Good to see you, Rick. Good to see everybody. I'll go briefly the two elements that we were requested to look at and retweak was the grillage and the historic grillage. Facing 19th on the historic building, which we're recreating, as hopefully Hernando will bring it up. Okay. And then the detailing on the bridge. There was an original bridge with an original railing, and the railing detail that we had was basically the same as the detailing in the building. And what we were requested is to try to do something more historical, contextual. And what we did is the original railing was the top railing, the bottom rail, the two posts, and within that top railing, bottom railing, and post, there was a frame that was separated top and bottom. It was actually non-symmetrical. And then within that frame, there were squares that had an ornamental S, and that was kind of random design. And we basically took the same pattern and substituted the old wrought iron S's for the perforated metal that we're using in the building to try to create a certain uniformity on the language of railings without being totally divorced from the architecture, but at the same time trying to react to the request that there should be some context in terms of the execution of that railing. Other than that, as Alfredo said and staff said, it's the same application, and we will be very grateful if you can approve it one more time. And with that, I'll just be here for questions. I don't want to extend the presentation more than it needs to be.
I suspect the board might have a few questions because it's a big property, a number of things going on, so we'll try to get them all out to you and give you a chance to respond to all of them.
Very good.
The board have questions, anyone?
Is this still a Blue Road project? Wasn't it originally Blue Road?
Unfortunately, no. Blue Road's no longer involved.
One thing I noticed on the A041, it looks like the facade is further back from the property line than the previous project.
Is that correct? It shouldn't be. It's actually the same.
It's the same.
The previous proposal, the facade to the property line was 79.6, and the new proposal shows it at 89.10.
In what page, please?
A041.
Yeah, it's confusing. It's confusing because back in 2019, this project was reviewed several times, and the applicant went back into the design. In one meeting, the board asked for that to be pushed back. So even though it says new proposal, that was the new proposal back in 2019.
Right.
So that is what they're asking to be approved.
It's already been revised, so it's mislabeled in the plans. So.
Right. Same one, and it's better that way.
Right. These plans match what was based for the approval in 2019, because our original submittal, like I said, had parking, had other changes that we and variances requested that were all eliminated.
Any other questions? No? Yeah, I know. Okay.
I have one other comment. Just the same comment that I had back in 2019. On the other end of the street where Vintro Hotel was, which is now a kayak hotel, they have a nice neon sign that says Park Avenue Hotel. And it's on the same street on the other end. There's going to be confusion. Maybe you should try to negotiate with them buying the sign and moving it. with any building that's renovated, especially when it's already a hotel, staying a hotel, this board usually requires them to keep the original sign. Like Traymore, they used it for the restaurant, but it was a Traymore Hotel. The Ankara at what was now the Gates, they had to maintain those signs. And I'm just worried about the confusion of having a real Park Avenue Hotel and a fake Park Avenue Hotel.
Duly noted. It will be something that will be addressed during. Thank you. But no coffee cup at the Ankara.
Okay, if there are no other questions, then we can thank you for your presentation, and we'll invite the public comment.
Okay, before we open the public, are there any disclosures? Okay, let's see. On Zoom, I see we have Joseph Magazine.
Hi, Joseph. You remain under oath, and you have 3 minutes.
Yes, of course. Similar to my comments I make many times when instances like this come up, completely understand this isn't under the jurisdiction of the planning board, so this is in absolutely no way in criticism of any decisions the HPB is making. Rather, it's an urging to our policymakers. We are in the middle of a housing crisis. And yet again, here we are in the middle of residential neighborhood zone, I believe RM1, it says it right on the agenda, converting a usage from residential multifamily into a hotel. I just do not understand what we are doing as a city, where we are doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on tourism, 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 and kicking out residents. We've seen it numerous times in Collins Park and other areas. Again, this is not a criticism of HPB, because I understand this isn't under your jurisdiction, but we must be the only city in all of America, and we are the epicenter of the housing crisis, that is actually getting rid of residential housing. So not only are we doing nothing to help the housing affordability, we are doing things to compound this crisis by not only not adding new stock, but we're actually taking existing stock offline. And it hasn't even been brought up if this building is still occupied. There was an issue that came up in March where we're converting a residential into a hotel, and the building is fully occupied. These are people's lives that are living there. I understand I'm fortunate enough to be able to be a homeowner in here, but in Miami Beach, but that doesn't mean as a city we shouldn't be there for our most vulnerable. So again, not directly to the HPB, it's not under your jurisdiction, but it's just a continuous urging to our policymakers to do something to stop the conversion of residential housing to transient usages. So thank you all for your time.
Okay, thank you. We also have Lloyd Mandel. Hi, Lloyd.
Hi, Lloyd. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Lloyd, can you unmute yourself? The microphone, click the little microphone on the screen.
Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, we can. Do you so swear?
Yes, I do so swear.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Lloyd Mandel. I am a neighbor of the property in question, and I operate buildings in this neighborhood. As I've been in this district operating hotels and residential properties for over 50 years, I am rather concerned with the architectural preservation in my neighborhood, since I'm part of the history of this neighborhood. I don't know the developers, but I have studied the plans very carefully. And as a neighbor, I simply would like to express my appreciation and my support for this project. I see it as a benefit to the neighborhood. It will continue to revitalize our neighborhood. And as a neighbor, I would like to express my strong support. And that is my comment.
Okay, thank you. I see no one else on Zoom.
Good afternoon, Matthew Goltanoff with the Miami Design Preservation League. We support the staff recommendations, understanding the project was already approved in its current form after several rounds of design feedback and adjustments. Notwithstanding, we do continue to express concerns between the compatibility of materials and design between the existing and the new structures, the new proposed structures. Thank you.
Thank you. I see no other members of the public wishing to comment.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any board member comments? Seeing no comment, would someone like to propose a motion?
I'll move to approve as per staff's recommendations.
I'll second.
Okay. Let me call the roll. Mr. Reed? Yes. Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Ms. Lovell?
Yes.
Mr. Breslin?
Yes.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, members of the board, that's our last regular item. I do have one notice that I wanted to give all of the board members and anyone listening from the public. Although we don't have specific details at this point, the commission chambers that we're sitting in today is going to be under renovation for the next several months. So I know we all look forward to the finished product. In the meantime, our September through likely the November meeting is going to be relocated to the convention center. We will be providing you with all of those details in terms of parking, building access, and the exact location within the convention center, likely in the next several weeks. So I just wanted to let you know that September will look a little different. We'll be in a different location, but it will still be open to the public, and we will still run the meeting the same way we're doing it today. The other thing I just wanted to let you know is if you guys could keep the 7801 Atlantic Way sets so that you can bring those back in September, that would be very helpful and probably save a couple trees. And that's all I had.
I'd like to bring up a point of discussion. Like today when we talked about 1529 Jefferson Avenue, and it was totally on Zoom, I feel that there should always be somebody representing the property right here up front, and if they're not, we should not be hearing it.
We are authorized for the hybrid format. I don't know if you could refuse to hear one, but I agree. It is much more
helpful. It's okay to have somebody on, but somebody still needs to be here representing them. I mean, usually there's an attorney, there's the owner, there's an architect. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different people that are involved with coming to us, and it seems that somebody should be here to represent them. I just felt very uncomfortable with the way that was handled.
It's very challenging when there's not someone in person, and I understand that. Is that something the board can require?
I think that, all of our boards, including, by the way, the City Commission, are permitting members of the public to appear either in person or virtually. So I think, it's okay for the board to express a strong preference that somebody be present in person. But I don't think you could turn an application down on the basis that the applicant is not physically present. That said, if, an applicant has an attorney or an architect or any other representative on the line, they should raise their hands when the applications are called. And I'd be happy to swear them in at that time so that they're all, on the panel, so to speak, on Zoom, so that they can, so that they can give their presentation. But I think my recommendation for now would be, if the board wants to express a strong preference, I think that's okay. And Debbie and Jake can advise applicants when they meet with staff.
Does any other board member share my concern?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and you're talking specifically about the applicant, not necessarily members of the public, but the applicant, to have a representative in the room would be highly recommended. For their own sake.
And for us, too.
Well, I had that concern when that item came up, first of all, because it went straight to public comment. So is there an applicant attached to this application? But then the applicant presented by Zoom, and so I looked at our agenda, and the agenda does say applicants and members of the public may attend the meeting virtually by Zoom. So I think since we seem to have a preference to have an applicant in person, that we can maybe send a letter to the commission asking that they can revise these requirements, that there has to be an applicant in person for a land use application particularly.
I have kind of a threshold question to that, which was when we were going through this, the thought came to my mind, does an applicant have to appear before, are they required to appear before us, or can they submit the application and ask us to, if you will, rule on the papers?
That's a good question. I think the board can rule on the papers, and I think we've seen it rarely, but we have seen it before. As long as, an application doesn't come before you until everything that is required under the code has been submitted and evaluated by staff. So if an application is before you, you have everything, technically you have everything you need, but very rarely does an applicant decide not to appear.
So I would say, absent some sort of legislative, I think we are kind of where we are, which is that expressing the strong preference for the benefit of the board, but also for the benefit of the applicant. And I think if we can communicate that perhaps in writing would probably be helpful, so that everyone is fully aware. That said, as much as I would prefer people to be here, I do understand that circumstances exist. We do have people who do not live in this jurisdiction who are presenting before us. And granted, we had this group that came from, you know, Charleston to come down here, but not everyone can do that at the time that things are. So I appreciate the ability, the flexibility that the Zoom platform does offer us in the occasion that they cannot be before us.
Okay. Is there anything else?
Can I change this? Yeah, I was going to ask you if there were any updates on the Deauville in terms of land use or any or change. No?
No. I mean, there's nothing that I'm aware of currently pending or even in discussion at any sort of policy level about modifications to regulations for that property.
Me either.
Is there an owner or anybody in like, the process of – nobody?
I believe the current owners are working toward finalizing their demolition permit. There are certain requirements, some minimum lot standards that are required, including fencing and some minimal landscape that's required for vacant sites. And so their demolition permit cannot be final until those elements are also part of their plan. So I believe they're working toward that. And really, that's the only update that I have in terms of future development. You know, there's been nothing submitted, and you know, I'm not aware of any ongoing discussions.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a separate question. You asked us to maintain the records for the 701 Atlantic Way. However, they did ask for a continuance today to go back and talk to more neighbors. Are we not anticipating any changes? Will you be provided with?
They could submit changes, but I don't know if they're going to. I know they're in discussions with their neighbor and the association. You know, depending on how those discussions go, they may submit changes, and then we would redistribute those changes to you. So I haven't been advised that they're making any changes at this point.
I would just ask that if there are changes or, you know, supplements to this, that we be informed what is and is not current. I'm sure you will. But
absolutely.
Just,
no, that's a good point because it does get very confusing.
You know, they may say substitute this sheet for that sheet, and I want to make sure that we know that in advance. We're not looking at the wrong thing.
Absolutely.
I do have one thing to share that came to my attention. It's actually just to relay to you all a message from the city about an ad hoc advisory charter review and revision board. And we've been asked as a board to, by the beginning of October, forward any suggestions on how the charter might be amended. So I can forward this to all of you or forward it to Debbie and then distribute it.
Yeah, why don't
this
why
was
don't
also
that?
Sent out to all the neighborhood associations as well.
Yeah, you can forward it to me, and I will distribute to the board members.
Okay. And if you'd like, if you'd like, we can schedule a discussion item at an upcoming meeting.
September would be the one, right? Because we don't meet in August. We'll have September, and then this has to be submitted by the beginning of October.
Okay.
So maybe we can make a point to do that.
Yes.
And in fact, maybe you could coach us up on what kinds of things we might be looking for. You know, we all had the large concerns in the legislative session earlier this year. I think that's a lingering concern. And I wonder if there's anything that we can do to recommend to the to prevent, you know, similar issues.
Sure.
Yeah, or what kind of things are usually addressed in these moments of modification? It's not obviously rewriting. It's just kind of what would we update? And are we thinking what's kind of within the scope of our possibility, you know.
We can. What I think we should do, Debbie, is I think we should meet internally and come up with some ideas to help frame the discussion. I serve as counsel to the Charter Review Committee, and the committee was appointed at the end of last year, and they started meeting in the spring, and they're going to be meeting for the next year and 2 or 3 months or so. Ideally, aiming to submit any proposed amendments to the charter to the voters in the November 2024 election. So there is a section in our charter that relates to historic preservation and to the Historic Preservation Board specifically, which I'd be happy to present to you on. Unfortunately, one of the bills passed by the legislature this year that was signed by the governor limits the ability of local governments to require a referendum in order to adopt a land development regulation. So right now we have a requirement in our charter that before watering down any of the powers and duties of the HPB or any of the historic preservation standards or regulations in our code, voter approval is required. And the new state legislation really limits our ability to enforce that referendum requirement. So anyway, we can get into greater detail when we meet on it, but I think it would be a good discussion to have in November.
I personally would love a comprehensive breakdown of demolition by neglect and what is legally allowed per the state, you know, local. I think recently there's been a lot of that, and I'm not an attorney, so I'm not clear on what is allowed and what is not. It'll continue to be an issue for City of Miami Beach.
A couple years ago, we had talked about the penalties for demolition by neglect and how to recommend that those be stiffened. I don't think that went anywhere because the assumption was that they're already pretty strong, but
and I think was Commissioner Fernandez the sponsor, I believe, of a recent modification that was adopted that included a presumption for demolition by neglect that the building be reconstructed. So that was one thing that we recently strengthened. The state legislation, which did not pass, was looking to preempt us from allowing that. We're grateful that that legislation did not pass, but I think it's important to continue, you know, having discussions specific about maybe incentivizing maintenance and repair and restoration of historic buildings. Because, you know, we can strengthen our ordinances all we want, but if we get preempted from enforcing those ordinances, it's a difficult situation we all get placed in.
Well, then you really count on incentives to make it a benefit to the
right.
to the landowner to do the right thing.
And that will be critically important if that legislation we hope, you know, but if that legislation comes back, this board should have a really good discussion about incentives.
I just have one more thing to bring up. I've talked to you before, Debbie, about 2445 Collins Avenue, the former Traymore Hotel. There is major demolition going on there, and we have not seen one thing come through this board.
Right, and I updated you as to the permit that was issued for windows and doors and for interior, non-public interior.
I'm concerned they're doing public interior without going and inspecting. I mean, I think at this point in time, somebody should just go to make sure, because this particular operator has been trying to overtake the adjacent condominium by going in a hostile takeover, you know, getting enough people to agree to sell so they can take over a condominium next door. So I wouldn't put anything past them.
Okay, we'll look into it, and we can send an inspector out to make sure they're not doing anything that their building permit is not
Thank
allowing
you.
Them to do. We can adjourn. Do we want to adjourn? Anything else? Okay. Well, thank you all, and we will see you in September. And make sure to note that you will be receiving emails about access to the convention center, et cetera. And feel free to reach out if anything comes up before September. Have a great August.